It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great panel in here. And, of course, we're going to spend the entire show analyzing all the announcements Apple made yesterday at the Worldwide Developers Conference. Our WWDC roundup next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 354, recorded June 11th, 2013. Leave Cindy alone. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak6. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers all your hat and Mac needs. We're all wearing hats today. No one knows why, starting with Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, who always wears a hat. I think it's in honor of you and your oats.
No, it's I guess we shouldn't be ungrateful to the Wall Corporation. I mean, it's nice that you sent us all those like home hair clipping kits for consideration for the show. But I mean, they're hard to use, and let's
kind of a problem.
So thank you for sending them, but we might not have to be able to write about them. Or
by the way, I'm glad to see that you're honoring Dennis the Menace by wearing a Jay Ward hat today.
Jay Ward hat?
Oh, no, it's a Hayward hat.
There you go.
Okay, I'm sorry. I looked at
Hayward Fire Department.
Yeah, Hayward Fire Department. All right, there you go. Hi, Andy. You did not go to San Francisco.
I did not go to San Francisco because I was making my travel plans a little bit too late. And there's nothing. It's like I had to like pick up my Google Glass Explorer edition. And there's nothing like spending a huge amount of money on something that you don't know if you're going to be able to use or not to think that, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be spending $800 or $900 to attend a keynote that is definitely going to be that I already knew was going to be streamed live anyway.
Yeah.
So had I started looking about 2 weeks earlier, I definitely would have been there.
But we're glad you're with us. And that's all that matters.
It looks like I didn't miss much. I mean,
yeah, okay. Well, we'll talk about it. I'm going to ask, did you have FOMA is the question, but we'll talk about it in a second. Let me introduce everybody else because they did come. the WWDC. Now, Aaron Hillegass has to because he's with Big Nerd Ranch, and he is one of the earliest developers for the Macintosh. In fact, was a Next Step developer.
That's right.
Who took your skills and moved them to the cocified Mac OS X.
That's right.
Nice
created
to see
Big
you.
Nerd Ranch 12 years ago now.
Great to have you. I see you have a great picture from 10 years ago of this guy, Scott Canaster, and anybody who's been in the Mac scene for more than 10 years remembers Scott's many books about programming on the Mac. Now he's at Google as a developer evangelist.
Developer relations, yeah.
Okay.
And
you don't evangelize, you just relate.
Well, I'm not as smart as I used to be.
But you got a nice hat.
I'm having a bad hair day, so thanks to you.
thanks to Scott for making his way up here. We're really glad to have
thanks
you.
Thanks for having
me. And finally, from Montreal and regular on the show and iMore.com, Renee Ritchie.
Hi, Leo.
Wearing your LA Tax Squad helmet.
I thought it was a new Mac Pro.
Okay, we should start with the new Mac Pro. You may not all remove your hats. The joke is going to wear
this one's really heavy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
careful
get my hat.
With you. Don't throw it. You can keep yours on.
Branding, man.
And it's branding. Branded. How do you know?
You do not receive trademark protection for what you say unless you're wearing that hat.
Exactly.
I guess since we have some pros here, we should really – and I think you probably – at least some of you are the market for a Mac Pro. Maybe not me and Andy. Maybe not you, Renee, but certainly Scott and Aaron. And with the understanding that this was a sneak peek, what the hell?
So every developer has a fantasy of themselves as sort of an evil genius.
Yeah.
And this is an evil genius computer,
Darth
right?
Vader's Mac
it's
Pro.
It's black. It's a cylinder. And you can imagine yourself, you can plug three 4K monitors into it. You can just imagine yourself in front of the bank of the enormous monitors. I think it's really going to make me feel like an evil genius.
It's interesting looking. one fan, one big fan at the top, and then that what they call, what do they call the
unified thermal core?
Yeah, you mean the heat sink going right through
the
middle?
That's that thing. The G4 cube.
Well, this is what I have to say. The real question is this a great innovative machine, you know, innovate my ass, as Phil Schiller said, or is it another cube? And it reminds me a little bit of the cube. What do you think, Scott? Are you excited?
Well, the cube was supposed to be mainstream, right?
Right.
So I think that
I bought one the last day of its availability, I'm proud to say.
Did it crack?
Yep.
I think the thing with the new Mac Pro is people are going to buy it no matter what it looks like. The people who are the market for it want it. They don't care what it looks like.
I wonder if this is not going to stimulate a giant market for Hackintoshes, to be honest with you.
Really? You think?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that is a concern for me, and Ars Technica had a good analysis of this. The dual GPUs, as great as they are soldered on.
Yeah.
There is no upgrade.
It is packaged like a MacBook Air or a new iMac. It is not a Mac Pro of old.
Easy to upgrade, I guess, the RAM, because there's only four sockets. Yeah. So if you really want to go big,
gotta go high density,
you're going to be paying a lot of money for those 8 gig or higher RAMs.
So as for the design, I love that they tried something insane. You know, and they picked the perfect machine to try it with because it's not a mainstream model. It's for the high end. And I love that they decided to take a flyer on making it in the U.S. because it's the right model.
I do like that.
Isn't it awesome? Like, the old Mac Pro was like the Escalade. It was the high end, but it had lots of room for kids and cars and everything you want in the back. And the new one's a Lamborghini. It's not a truck. I mean, there's no
Escalade
room in the back
for
anything.
It was a country squire. That thing was a boat.
It was an expensive boat.
But I loved it. I mean, I have four drives in mine. And I think there are a lot of people who love the idea. You got all those drive bays. It's easy to get into.
But Thunderbolt too. So I mean, you can go out to drive bays, and you can go out to potentially to Retina Thunderbolt displays when they ship.
Right.
Yeah. I think the point is that Apple didn't decide to abandon pro users, but they decided to let go of a certain kind of pro user. So they want the kind that really needs super high performance, the kind that would, for God's sakes, need three 4K screens on their desktop at the same time, but not the sort of person who's like, I'm sorry, but it's taking entirely too long to crack these 15,000 passwords. I'm going to have to install 8 Radeon cards.
It's a Bitcoin mining machine. Let's face it.
Well, if I plug in three 4K screens to, what am I going to do with the rest of my 4K screens?
Well, what are you going to do with the rest of your millions of dollars? Because let's think how much the Pro is going to cost by itself, and then how many 4K screens do you you afford?
I saw John Siracusa last night doing a mental breakdown of how much the components were going to cost, like how much those CPUs would cost, how much those GPUs would cost. And it's not going to be cheap. Like, the MacBook Air was fairly cheap. The iMac was fairly cheap.
Are you looking at a $10,000 machine here?
I don't think $10,000, maybe $4,000 to $5,000, unless they get a really good deal on parts.
I was checking with some builders myself yesterday afternoon, and that was their back of the envelope guess too, that they don't think it could be sold for less than $4,000. They'd be surprised if they didn't hit a $5,000 to $6,000 target, though.
And then add a monitor. That's without monitor.
And pro-level margins are, pretty good for Apple.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking $6,000 out the gate. But I paid $6,000 for my last Mac Pro once I, stocked it appropriately.
But you could change the drives. You could change the graphics cards. This one you can't.
And I have changed the graphics card. I upgraded the graphics card a month or two ago with a 2950. And this was another point Ars Technica made. The Mac OpenGL drivers are so god-awful that I saw no speed improvement, none, on a much faster card. And on Windows, a ton of improvement. And I think even Apple even said this, and this is going to get a little geeky, but they said OpenCL. They want you, instead of CUDA, they want you to go with OpenCL.
OpenGL 4.something and OpenCL,
What is the pro... You're a programmer, so I don't think it's quite as an issue for you. It's more for a graphics or video guy.
But
right?
You know why they want to do it is they want to be able to move between different graphics card providers. They don't want you to go in CUDA. They want you to using
CUDA's
open
NVIDIA
standard.
Only.
That's right.
Open
they want
you
to,
standard.
They want to be able to put ATI or whatever cards inside it.
Right, mostly ATI. I don't know where the whatever might be.
And also
Joe's GPU, I don't know.
The strangest thing, like, there was a lot of strange things this event, but one of them is that Apple did a sneak preview. I mean, it was a perfect event for a pro machine. We discussed that last week, but it's not shipping until later in the year, so it was way ahead. Usually Apple comes out and says, available today, available in 2 weeks. And some of that might be still chipset related. Some of that might just be them not finishing it.
Well, it's not a Haswell, is it? It's an Ivy Bridge, I think. That's what Anand quickly jumped in and said.
There was some debate yesterday about
Haswell Xeon. So
But it wasn't the one that Apple would probably use is still coming. It's not available yet. Right. And if they use the last ones, then people will be upset because it'll mean there will be a spec update to the next ones.
Right.
But the point is usually that Apple won't announce a product they can't sell immediately because they don't want to cannibalize something else. But no one's buying Mac Pros right now. So they're like, what the heck? Let's show them.
Yeah, nothing to cannibalize.
That's exactly right.
In fact, there's a lot of reason to do it now just to stem whatever flow there might be of pros away from Macintosh.
Exactly.
Say, hey, we are going to do something for you.
Yeah, the opposite situation from what they're usually in, where they don't want to cannibalize the product that they have. This time they want to stop
it. It's Museum of Modern Art beautiful. I mean, I'm not denying that.
And it's shiny. It's not bead beaten at all.
It is aluminum. Yeah. I thought it might be polycarbonate because it looks like
a Cylon.
You know, if it has a little red light in the back that goes up and down, I'm buying it.
That sounds like a great mod, actually.
And when you take the housing off, it looks like Darth Vader in his meditation chamber before they put the helmet back on. I can't believe that was an accident.
No. By the way, it is about the size of his helmet. It's only about eight inches
and it's
tall.
One-eighth the volume of the previous Mac
Pro. It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's tiny.
But because it doesn't have any spinning drives in it, it only has SSD.
And they had several of them on display on the third floor of Moscone. So they had two that were closed and two that were open. It looks exactly like Andy said, like someone came in, the clamps took the helmet, pulled it straight up, and you see the back of the skull all on the side. Yeah. It's beautiful looking inside and out, though. I mean, they do the aesthetics.
I'm not denying it's gorgeous. Yeah. I think what it would be, though, is overpriced and not very upgradable. And with how many USB? Just three or four USB ports?
Strangely, a lot of FireWire.
Yeah. And there's FireWire on it?
But here's the heartbreaking thing. It is a beautiful object, and it'll be beautiful for about 10 minutes until the user is done admiring it, and they put it on the desk and start plugging all these crappy cables into it. And then 3 weeks later, when it's been like recycling all the dust in the office through the system for 3 or 4 weeks, it's gonna. I mean, I know a lot of high end computer users. I don't know a lot of high end computer users that are fastidious about dusting.
But when you turn it lights up, Andy. When you turn it, it lights up.
Oh, my God. I got to have it now. I'm thinking it's really a very rich person's home theater PC is what it really is. It should be quiet with that big fan.
Yeah. I officially give myself permission to hate anybody who buys this machine as a home theater PC.
Andy.
Officially, I'm okay. Especially if you have to buy it because you have three 4K projection screens.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying.
And you can AirPlay to the screens too now.
It's spite, but still, I'm going to own that. And I'm going to hate you for that.
I apologize in advance, Andy.
How many people are that big a fan of the Spice Girls movie, Renee? I mean,
right here, sir,
in 3D, baby, on four 4K screens. By the way, if you go to apple.com/MacPro, you get I should do that again. A little. Can you see my computer? Little space animation. Da, 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 da. I want to throw a... Yeah, bring me over the 25th anniversary, Matt, because I want to kind of compare the two. This is Apple's 25th anniversary, Matt. Wow, if you paint this black...
that's where all the
unsold taller and thinner.
No innovation, my ass.
That was...
This has a lovely DIN plug for the speaker. Look at that. That's like 50,000 pin.
I've seen in the Apollo program.
Yeah. You don't have to bring the whole thing over. It's okay. We just wanted to show the CPU, but is 4K? Put in the rest of it. Yeah, that's not quite 4K. That might be a half K display.
If I put all my iPads together, it would add up to 4K.
Anyway.
That must have come for something.
I'm sorry to be so negative. I shouldn't be so negative. It's a beautiful thing. But I think what I'm wondering is, are pros going to flock to this? We don't know. I mean,
Can they rack mount it?
No. Well, that's, you know, cylinders are not the most efficient. Actually, they are the most efficient way for that volume, aren't they?
They're just hard to pack.
But they're not most efficient when it comes to putting other things around them.
Right. They're the most efficient in units of one.
Yeah. And, you know, for cooling, they're probably a very efficient. I don't know, but I would guess that's a very efficient setup. And, you know, it's a beautiful page at apple.com/MacPro. So you click it. And something will happen. Scroll? I'm on Linux. I can't scroll.
Show title.
While we were watching this video during the keynote, I was thinking to myself, this is either a promo video for a really awesome desktop PC or a really bad Will Smith movie.
Up to 2 times faster, considering the last one was 2.5 years ago. Yeah. 2 times is kind of... actually, that's compared to the current Mac Pro 2.5 years ago.
There is a theory that Apple needs a hypercar. That they have to have something at the top that's sort of their inspirational drip down.
I don't know. I have to give Apple a lot of credit in that the people who are buying this, they don't really care about cool desktop design. They just want the amps. They just want the power. So the fact that they really went to town on this, probably knowing that even given that it's going to be a one of a kind machine that they can charge thousands of dollars for, that gave them a certain amount of liberty. But I'm not sure when I wrote about it this morning. It's on the Sun Times site and the Grid Chicago site. I did say that what I like the most about this is that this is not an aspirational device. This is designed to actually be put to work and not simply admired. I mean, you could put your cardboard Quaker Oats box on the top of it and just not even admire it at all, and you'd still be getting every single ounce of every single dollar of value you'd be getting out of it.
Do you find it odd they put AC in 802.11 AC in there when they offer? Well, actually, they have an AC airport.
Yeah, they announced the new AC too. Airport Extreme.
AD is literally just around the corner, yeah. and has some significant benefits over AC. This is not an upgradable machine, folks. You're buying, in my opinion, you're going to be buying.
It's the first
2013
one.
Technology.
Apple has a history of first ones, like the first MacBook Air, the first Retina MacBook Pro, the first unibody MacBook.
I think this is going to sell kind of like the Cube and the 25th anniversary Mac. It's a specialty product. How about, let me ask the audience, because there's probably a lot of pros in the audience. There's a huge audience here. By the way, thank you all for being here. This is an unusual number of people for Mac Break Weekly. Dan Benjamin in the back. It's great to see you. No, he's just wearing a 5x5 shirt. So how many of you will buy this? One guy. Yeah. Anybody else? Why would you buy this, sir? Just shout it out.
You do video production.
Yeah. I would wonder if some people might say, you know, gosh, I could get a PC that is going to be upgradable, maybe a little bit more, effective and certainly more affordable. You think they're going to consider? Would they consider that? I don't know. You have to Hackintosh it if you want to run Final Cut. They did say, by the way, Final Cut will be updated for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of my concerns is it vents out the top. And I know my wife is going to lay a binder or something right on top of it. And the whole thing is going to melt down.
Maybe
there's
going to
be a puddle of Mac Pro there on my desk.
No, the good news is...
Can you video that?
Exactly. The binder will slowly rise in the air.
I was going to say, that's actually the advanced version of the CPU monitor. You just put like a hollow plastic ball on top of it. You can tell by how much it's hovering over that vent how much the CPU is overstressed. So try to like power down before it gets halfway towards the ceiling.
Sounds like a game opportunity.
So I wanted to get that out of the way because there's a lot of great stuff. Yeah. And I did, in fact, immediately go out and buy a MacBook Air and a new AirPort Extreme. So we're going to talk about some of the other stuff. And iOS 7 and OS 10 probably are the big stories. Mavericks.
Yep.
Nice.
Nice Top Gun reference, Leo.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the need for speed. What was his sidekick's name?
Gooseman.
Gooseman. Goose. The Goose. You think it'll be OS 10 Gooseman next?
Or Iceman?
Iceman.
See, that brings up a concept. Like, how much I'm not even joking here. Do you think that as they're arguing about what the title should be, someone is there in the room specifically to say, so you're the designated spoil sport? And he was like, okay, Maverick, one big wipeout for Apple.
We'll be your wingman anytime.
Yeah, you're right.
What I was really surprised by in Mavericks is the tagging.
Let's talk about it. I want to take a break because I have some strong opinions about all this stuff. Having, you know, watched, we did live coverage. By the way, the final numbers are in. About 250,000 people tuned into our live coverage. So thank you very much. And I'm sure that's a small number compared to the people who actually watched the Apple stream. Thank you, Apple, for streaming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bravo. They streamed last year's WWDC, didn't they?
They streamed intermittently.
It's like, maybe they don't do the consumer events, but they know that the developers want to see this stuff.
And I think they did.
And they couldn't get everybody in.
And that might be part of the new Apple thing we were talking about, where they're going to do this going forward.
Gosh, I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love that. Because it gives us all a chance to be there, like Andy, to be there even if we can't afford to or even have the time to get over
it. And as someone who live blogs it, some people don't like it when they stream it because they think it takes numbers away from their live blog. But for me, it takes off the pressure of me having to, you know, if I make a mistake, that's bad. And this way, at least I'm providing commentary and color and not a factual replay of what they're doing.
And I think that's important. The live blogs then become commentary, which is what we do as
well.
Like
a sporting event.
Yeah. And I think that's really a more appropriate role for us than documenters of Apple's announcements. I mean, let Apple document
it. But for a period, we destroyed their business.
I know. And I never understood why Apple didn't stream. I thought, don't you want control of this? Don't you? You're going to let these live bloggers control
it? I think it was an attention vortex. They thought that if they didn't live blog it, if they didn't stream it live, people would be so desperate to see it that they would get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
I think they also wanted to make sure that the stream doesn't fall down with hundreds of thousands of people watching it because when Apple ships something, they want it to be right.
Right.
And I think that...
That was the story from within Apple. A number of people, supposedly Apple streaming engineers, said, we just weren't confident that we could do a stream.
And they're doing it their own way, of course, HGTV live streaming.
Right.
No flash. It's not on YouTube.
Safari only party.
Yes.
You know, they should just put it on YouTube live. Then they wouldn't have to worry. And
why wouldn't they do that?
Why wouldn't you do that? Is there a Bing Live?
Why don't you send Tim Cook out wearing Google Glass? And just do it that way. Have a hangout.
Let's see it from Tim's POV.
Let your live stream crash your opponent's servers, not your own.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back. We will talk. There's lots more to say about WWDC. Andy Yannacco is here. It's great to have you. Renee Ritchie, our regular. Scott Canaster and Aaron Hillegas. It's great to have all of you here to talk about WWDC. More Mac news coming up in just a little bit. But first, a word from Gazelle. Yes, there may be a time when you feel, I would like to sell my old iPhone, my old iPad, my old Macintosh, and acquire a new one. Go straight to gazelle.com. In fact, now's the time to do it. Get that 30-day locked-in quote. It's not a commitment to sell. It's just a locked-in quote. Do you have an old MacBook? You're perhaps maybe a 13-inch MacBook Air you want to unload? This is the place to do it, to get maximum value. I'm not going to go through all the steps. Let's just do a simple one. Let's do an iPhone 5. There's a new iPhone coming. AT&T. Let's do a 32 gigabyte of AT&T, kind of the middle of the road. 300. Whoa. I think that price is going up. $310. Now, here's the deal. Get a bunch of stuff. I know you've got a drawer full of old rims and HTC and LG and Motorola, Nokia and Samsung phones, tablets from all the tablet manufacturers, not just Apple, but Amazon, Asus, Google, Microsoft, and Samsung, many of them anyway, iPods. Just find that drawer. Empty it out. Go through Gazelle. Get a lot of cash. Oh, look, they're even buying Mac Pros now. That's interesting. And old Mac Minis and iMacs, too. Get cash right now. So what you'll do is they'll ship it. Anything worth more than a buck, they'll pay for the shipping. So once you get everything together, they'll send you a box, postage paid. You ship it back to them. And they check it out, by the way. They wipe data off of it. In fact, they even check the condition. And if you underestimate it, if you said, it's not in great shape, and they said, no, it's good shape, they'll upgrade your offer. I've never seen a company do that, but I've seen them do it many, many times. Then you could choose from a check, PayPal credit, or, and this is the pro tip, an Amazon gift card gives you a little bit more. They bump you up a little bit. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. They're buying back stuff. They've done it for over 500,000 people over the last few years. In fact, they've paid out more than $100 million. Offers are good for 30 days, so that gives you time to decide to get your data off of it, to buy the new one. Free shipping on most items, fast processing, and cash in your pocket. What's not to like? Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Big winner, in my opinion, WWDC, and maybe you guys were in the audience, you could tell me, Craig Federighi.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, was he good.
Craig's incredible. I worked with him at Next. He's just a really smart, articulate
guy. So he's an old-timer. He's been there a long time.
He's been there a long time.
Since Steve.
He took a little break. He went and worked for Ariba. He was the CTO at Ariba, but he's back at Apple and an amazing engineer.
He was loose. He was funny. He ad-libbed. He clearly related well to developers, which was, I think, important at a developers conference.
And he also, they let him, I don't know if they let him, or he did take liberties to kind of poke a bit at the previous iterations of, this one doesn't need stitched leather to stick on the screen, Greenfelt Free Zone.
No more. Right.
He ran out of Greenfelt, that's right.
No more wood, that's got to be good for the environment.
Right? Yeah.
That was pretty good.
No virtual cows were killed in the making of this calendar.
Was it his line? There were a couple of lines that really stood out, and this is kind of the thing about an Apple keynote. If you can get a couple of lines, one of them stood out is, "Well, we're not going to hold OS X back because of a shortage of big cats." Yeah. Was that him? Who was that?
Yeah,
was that
Schiller?
That was him. That was a great line.
And the sea lion as well.
And he said, "We're going to call it OS X sea lion." Kidding.
Yeah.
But although that was a small joke, it's important to point out that what he was saying was that there's another 10 years of Mac.
Ah.
And that's something that makes Mac developers nervous, is every time we see the two platforms get a little closer together, we see maps show up and unified notifications, we think gradually the platforms are merging together. And when they say, we couldn't think of another cat or another 10 cats, so we're going to cities, Mac developers think, okay, now we feel like there's a future. Yeah. 10 years.
And there is. And this was not the iOSification that we perhaps were worried about with OS X.
This was,
by the way, Mavericks.
Mavericks. And
which
this
is a surf beach that I grew up near, in near Santa Cruz, that is deadly. But if pro, if you're a pro surfer, that there's one of the biggest surf competitions in the world is there every year.
Well, the interesting thing to me was that it, in, instead of bringing the for the last two versions, the design language has been coming together. They've been using the same leather and stitching and names. And this year, iOS 7 and...
Big break.
Yeah, they couldn't look more different. This is almost like a Snow Leopard version of the Mac. Everything has gone back to the, you know, stately aluminum, beautiful trim. Well, iOS has gone a completely different direction.
Although it's interesting, they're really using the Designed in California thing as a marketing point now. They brought it up. It's in the, it's at the end of their new ad.
Yeah.
It's the name Mavericks, they said, is the first name of California place names. Mm-hmm. And Apple devices for a long time have said Designed in California on the back.
They call it their signature now.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Sorry, they said before
signing
we put our signature on it.
Yeah.
It struck me that they must have done some market research. I think for a while, being from California was not a positive, you know, around the rest of the country.
Well, California was broke for a while.
Yeah, well, but not even that. I think we're California. You and I are Californians. Yeah. So let me ask the non-Californians at the table. I think it was often thought, California's like granola. What ain't fruits is nuts, or what ain't flakes is fruits and nuts. And it was not, but I think it's maybe hip again.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think they could have expanded. I wouldn't have blamed them for expanding their slogan to, well, no, saying that Designed in California, comma, we had nothing to do with Proposition 8.
That would be good.
But, I mean, you know, that sense that the future is invented in California.
I think it's starting to be a little hipper.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, if you look at the overall message with the Made in America Mac and Designed in California, it's orienting Apple very heavily as an American company, as someone who's doing work in you know, a trendy area of
at
America.
At the same time, it's clear international is very, very important to them.
It's it is, China, but they got a lot of bad headlines internationally last year. And this kind of really centers them in the U.S.
Right.
And also, they really want to put the focus on, we are a company composed of people who have passion for what we do, and we are artists who are creating work.
Right.
And when you have we are an international global conspiracy, and we have no idea what components of what we designed at what part of our company. I think that if they ever were to delete Design in California, that would be a really grotesque step. I think so. I love seeing that.
You think next year, OS 10 Mountain View, probably.
I'm hoping for Petaluma personally.
Well, it's not. It's beaches, right? Is it beaches or?
Well, we just said places.
Yeah, we don't know. Big Sur. Yeah. There's some places that resonate well. Yeah. You know, Malibu. There's some that have kind of a nice feeling to them. I think globally, probably California is a good trademark.
Yeah, Cupertino.
As well.
Yeah,
Cupertino. If you know Cupertino.
but also most of us have traveled, you know, internationally, and so you know that you go into London just as like when you're over in the United States, you see that, you know, a tire store is called, you know, Piccadilly Fair Lane to give you tires to give you, it's make it sound posh and wonderful. Internationally, when you evoke California, you're saying, oh, it's hip and it's trendy and it's everything, it's Hollywood and it's everything that you aspirational that you want to be. I mean, every country I've gone
Hollywood
to, I've seen
exactly.
I've seen some reference. Unfortunately, Boston doesn't have the same connotation in Beijing as California does. But it's such a smart part of the branding. It's such a
I don't think it's bad.
Fine example of the things that Apple does pay attention to.
Golden Gate,
OS X, straight out of Compton.
Yeah, Death Valley.
Yeah, Death Valley. Yeah, the jokes are going to come. You know, so let's go
with attitude.
let's go through some of the new features. They finally moved iBooks over to the desktop. It's been on iOS, of course. I think that's a good move, especially for the textbook market.
It sounded like there was people who didn't want it to be on OS X for a while, and now that, you know, again, it's a whole new team at Apple. They can do these sorts of things.
Good.
You know, Maps also moved over.
Well, I have to point out that Kindle is on the desktop. Mm-hmm. You really be crazy not to.
On the desktop, any web browser.
Is Maps an app?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a desktop app. I think that's smart, too, because after all, Google probably owns this space on the desktop.
Yeah, and if you share a link with somebody, like currently there was no way to open an OS X. If someone sends location, it would have to go to the web, and now at least the whole system works together.
Yeah.
And also, most people, when they use Maps on the desktop, it's so that they can use that data on a mobile device. So that idea of popping up a menu of here are all your iOS devices, send this route, send this location to that device, that's wonderful. That's majestic.
Yeah. And something that Chrome does with Android. But
absolutely. But pushing between devices.
Let's not be those guys who
said,
oh,
interesting.
You pull something up and you get to turn on Bluetooth from a notification bar. What have I said? That's
what we'll stipulate that a lot of that can be said.
Yeah.
In fact, my takeaway from WWDC and our coverage yesterday was there was catch-up, mm-hmm. there was copying, and there was innovation, yeah. probably in equal measure. And I think that's appropriate. That's the way users want it to
absolutely.
Happen. If there's a good idea on another platform, take it. I understand why people don't like it, because Apple is not treating people who do that in the other direction very yeah. well, Samsung. But I think that's for users, that's exactly what we want.
But also the user community has matured as users as well. Like with notifications, that was the first time they tried dragging from the edge of the screen as a type of gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested that and people started using it. And now they're doing dragging from the bottom and the left and the right.
Yeah.
So we, as a user community,
have
become much more.
WebOS deserves a huge amount of credit, because almost every modern platform now is using things that WebOS tried but never managed to bring to market.
The Palm folks really actually had a very, I thought so.
They had an amazing coherent vision for what you can use on a mobile device.
The cards, and we'll talk about them when we get to iOS 7. So there's Maps, which by the way will nicely integrate into Mail and Contacts mm-hmm. and Calendar. That's a really strong reason to have Maps on the desktop.
Absolutely.
I can, and they showed this demo add to my calendar and an event, and then it'll add travel time.
And it's got some smarts. It looks around you to find things that you might be interested in. And like Andy said, it'll push to your phone because you want to research at home, but you want to take it out with you when you go.
Yeah. Facebook events appear right in your calendar. I'm not sure I like that, but that's a feature. Safari.
But isn't it brilliant that it's also smart enough to know that if your previous appointment is in location A and your next appointment is in location B, it's smart enough to block out that time for you without even asking. I'm going to advise you before you try to schedule something 20 minutes before this other appointment that you are supposed to be in transit at that time, sir.
And that's something that Google, for all of its map sophistication, never did with Google Calendar. I think that's a great feature. There's an example of innovation that will certainly be copied.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of stuff that we want, like Google Now, where it knows where we are, knows what we're doing.
Yes.
And that kind of stuff should just expand from
everybody. Now is another way of doing it. But Safari, a lot of this under the hood, faster JIT, things like that.
But the sidebar with the links from Twitter and Facebook, that's mm-hmm. kind of fun.
The social angle. Now, we've seen social browsers try to do this before, and I've always had a kind of mixed feelings about it, but I'll be interested to see. It is, it's true that these days a lot of the links we follow come from Twitter, our friends on Twitter.
Sure.
The big thing,
Go ahead, Scott.
It's all in the details, the implementation of how they do that, right? If they make it convenient and nicely collected, then it will be a win, and otherwise it'll be just less of a win.
It'll be ping. Right.
The big thing for me was the change to having separate threads in every tab, because previously, Chrome did that. Apple tried a different way of implementing that. And I don't know if that was a half step where they actually thought they had a better way, but this sort of says that no, that's the right way to do it.
It's for the right way for stability, because if a tab crashes, it doesn't crash the browser.
Absolutely.
And for security, because inter-process communication is limited.
That's right.
Each tab is in effect sandboxed.
Mm-hmm. And for sanity, because it won't reload our tabs all the time when we're in the middle of doing something.
Right. Yep. Is this something that was easy to do, you think, in Cocoa, Aaron, or how?
I mean, it wasn't easy. It's never easy to take something like that and stretch it all apart. But they had seen Mozilla do it, I think, or Chrome.
Chrome, yeah.
And so I think we had examples.
I don't know if Mozilla does that.
I don't think
so. I'm sorry. And I misspoke. It was Chrome.
I'm just thinking if they might. Yeah, Firefox, I don't think does that. It's a big feature of Chrome.
Absolutely. I know Chrome did it. I read it in the Chrome comic book.
That comic book is awesome.
That was brilliant.
I love that comic book.
Yes.
Okay, moving on. We're just kind of going to cover the highlights here in the new OS X. These are, some of the benchmarks. And somebody in the chat room said, where's IE on the benchmarks? Well, you can't run IE on OS X. So I realized after I said that out loud that there's no reason to have those. iCloud Keychain, finally. If you're 1Password or LastPass, you might not like this idea. But I've always wondered, we have a great keychain. I think people don't even realize in OS X you can generate secure passwords, mm-hmm. store them in the keychain, but it's just never communicated with your browser.
It wasn't human either. It was not something where my mom would go and click on it and open it. And like the 1Password guys are at WWDC. A lot of the people are there. And it's similar
to Sherlocked?
Well, you know, there is a level of Sherlocking, but there's this theory, and the same thing happened with Marco Arman and Instapaper when they did reading lists, that it creates an awareness in the market that, you know,
it's
that's
validation.
Yeah, that, and they're also happy that it makes secure, I think they put it up on Twitter, that it makes secure passwords a mainstream feature.
Yes.
And unique passwords per site, because people weren't doing, they weren't making unique passwords per site, and this will make it easier to do that. So it'll cover the, you know, people who would never buy one password anyway. And other people will want more functionality, so they'll upgrade.
Like cross, and it's also cross-platform.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's a really important point, is that Apple is only doing it for Apple devices.
A great idea, though. So for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, the idea is you've always had a keychain on OS X that was unlocked when you logged into your OS X user partition. But now that keychain is accessible to Safari, and it will remember credit card information as well as passwords. So you can easily fill it. And it's nicely integrated on Safari.
Beautifully designed, too.
Drop-downs and all of that.
Little icons.
I presume only Safari, though. Yep. Other browsers won't get access.
Which is what leaves room open for 1Password.
Exactly.
If you use Windows as well, or you use Chrome as well.
Also, I'm not sure that's true. There is a keychain API that programmers can use.
So Firefox,
what I would assume that what they've primarily done is made it sync between all the devices.
Yes.
And I would hope that developers will have access to the iCloud keychain. I don't know anything yet.
On iOS 7, too, would be really nice.
Yeah.
In fact, and did they say that Safari and iOS 7 will support it? Because that's one limitation of 1Password and LastPass on iOS is they don't have access to the browser, so you have to cut and paste.
There's no plugins, and Password is painful on mobile to enter because you can't see it. The keyboards aren't as good. And
so it would be nice if it's integrated into Safari on iOS. That's a selling point.
The whole point of cross-platform, isn't it?
Right.
To have it.
Well, but that would be the opposite of cross-platform. But it'd be nice to have it on, I guess, cross-Apple platforms.
They say cross-platform.
What they say, really?
Oh, yeah.
I think of Apple as a platform, frankly. Yeah.
They did show things for OS X that they didn't show in iOS. I don't know exactly which features are going to copy over yet.
Credit card easy entry. It says all your devices. So let's look at that tab in the, all your devices, iPad, iPhone.
Yeah.
And desktop, and it looks like it's the password in Safari on iOS. So your passwords are stored only on your Mac and devices you approve, where they're updated automatically, protected with AES 256 in transit, as well as on the devices. That's good. Boy, I love this multiple. At first I thought, what do you mean multiple displays? You already support multiple displays. And then they blew my mind.
It was bad before, because you would go you'd go full screen, the other app monitors would just go gray.
Right.
Now they really support multiple displays.
Yeah, including HDMI and AirPlay.
AirPlay.
Right.
AirPlay would be amazing. I can't wait to have, because I've used AirPlay with my Mac, and it's great, but then that's all you're doing is watching. It's all mirrored.
It kills your Mac.
As soon as I saw that, I made plans to buy like a couple of more Apple TVs because that just makes every single good screen in your house into a second display. And oh boy, I can't wait to do things in every room of my house with every 38-inch and 45-inch and 60-inch screen as a second display.
And with Keynote, now you have second screen on your laptop if you're using AirPlay to put it up on the TV.
Yep.
I love the idea of watching Game of Thrones on the TV and being able to figure out who the hell is
Mac Pro 4K display, no wires.
I'm watching it on a 1080p, and there's a little bit of lag. I'm not sure if it's going to be able to support 4K very well, but over wirelessly. Well,
by the time 4K is more mainstream, the
it'll be AD.
Apple
and
TV
then,
doesn't anyway, so it's full screen apps across multiple displays. Mm-hmm. That's great. Something you couldn't do before you went full screen, as you said. You got a gray background on the other one. I think this is all what should have been done, frankly, in the first place, but at least they responded to.
But it's a difference now because they went to the yearly releases. So before it would be in 18 months to 2 years, they would have done all of it, but now it's incremental.
Each has its own menu bar. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And a big shift. Apple's never done that on multiple
displays. You can bring
up
the dock on multiple displays.
If you're attached to an external display and you detached because it's a PowerBook, it's a MacBook, and you like to travel with it sometimes, it won't screw up that display. And when you come back and replug it in, it'll actually start working again. Instead of having those stupid, like super skinny, super narrow windows that wind up collated on your main display, your main machine, that you have to then hunk down and navigate.
And I do that.
It really is like they put out roach traps all throughout the kitchen where all these really annoying problems with second screens are, and they killed the entire colony. They knocked out the queen.
Yeah. And I think, they've really encouraged second screen because, that's how I use my MacBook with Retina at home, is I just plug it into the...
me too.
The big screen, the 27-inch, and it's a great way to do it. Notifications, which were, I think, a little annoying. I'm not sure if they're going to be less annoying or more powerful.
But they're actionable, which looks like we're not getting on iOS 7. You can actually respond to SMS or not, sorry, iMessage right in that notification.
Right. So interactive notifications, it'll pop up and you'll be able to, somebody messages you, respond in the notification. Websites now will be able to use the notification system. I didn't know they couldn't before.
You could.
I thought they could.
Safari had its own notification system, but it didn't persist into
a website.
Yeah.
And syncing between devices of notifications. So when you've checked off on one, it won't appear on the other is amazing.
Yeah. It's funny. Google just announced that 2 weeks ago at Google I.O. and now Apple has it too. So that's if you use notifications, you need that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I constantly getting up and moving.
Is that an open API? Can any app developer put that functionality into notifications?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do notifications. Okay.
No. I mean, make an actionable notification from your application.
Oh, I can't comment on that.
we should mention
Has anybody read online?
If you're a developer at WWDC, you signed some stringent NDAs, and so Aaron,
I can talk about anything that was in the keynote.
Yeah, can only say stuff that's already been made public.
Yep. Otherwise, you have to keep it under your hat, right?
Exactly.
And that's why he's got such a damn big hat. Scott, are you in the same boat? Or are you a developer?
I am. And I'm in the same boat.
Okay. And are you in the same
big
boat?
Yeah, I had to cover the keynote, and that's the only way I could get into the keynote.
Did you really receive a national security letter from... Oh, I just
read it. You can't say
that.
I'm Canadian.
He's a Canadian. He can say anything he wants. And Andy, are you a developer?
I intentionally allow my developer membership to lapse a couple of months before WWDC, and then I will buy it again in a couple of weeks after I'm done writing about WWDC.
Yeah,
that's an awesome idea.
Because it's not like I'm trying to like divulge stuff that's happening at WWDC, but I hate this thing where I want to write about this thing that's in the keynote. It's been talked about everywhere, and so it's easier if I just simply not be a developer for about a month.
I have a global policy, no NDAs,
and you can watch the videos later. Now, I mean, they're getting the videos up day and date, which is fantastic. But you can if you go and Fandy Renew. In 2 weeks, he can go and watch the same State of the Union and everything that everyone else gets to see now.
Right. That's nice. Who won, by the way, the Apple Design Awards? Do we know?
Letterpress.
Ah, good. I love that.
So Lauren Brichter now has bookend design awards, one for a game, one for a social network. That's awesome. I don't know what he's going to do next.
Yeah.
Coda 2.
Coda's great.
Oh,
I love
that's
Panner.
A great one.
They deserve that.
Badlands.
Is that a game?
Yes.
I hope so.
Also,
a terrible name for a word processor. Okay.
Procreate, which is an art app.
Uh-huh.
And I think there were a couple other games, but their names escape me.
Great. Yeah, congratulations.
It was fast this year,
I forgot that the last night was the Apple Design Awards as well. Moving on, Finder tabs. You were all excited, Aaron Hill, I guess. Now, actually, you like tags. Let's talk about tabs, and we'll get to tags. This is something I've had in Pathfinder since, I don't know, it feels like 1988. Mm-hmm. Finally migrates to the real Finder. And I think this is something that probably came from browsers. You watch proficient users. They've got hundreds of tabs in their browser. Seems like a logical extension of the
Finder. It's like Aaron was saying with gestures. People have gotten used to tabs. When tabs first appeared, they were weird. And only hardcore users who'd used it in other browsers knew what to do with it right away. And now it's pretty well ingrained, so putting it in the Finder makes a lot of sense.
But also, we're going more and more to full-screen applications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you don't expect to see... You want it to be able to operate as one window.
Now you have that full-screen little button in the upper right of Finder, so you can suddenly... And I think Spaces makes full-screen work pretty well. I swipe. Yeah. I find myself going full-screen a lot, swiping, blocking apps to specific spaces... So that I have a Safari space, an email space, a Finder space. It makes a lot of sense to swipe back.
And sometimes Windows, like you want the spatial orientation of being in one app, but you still want more real estate. And this lets you keep that coherent one app space and still just page through.
Will you be able to, are tabs spring-loaded? Will I be able to drag a file to a tab?
Yes, if you hover over the tab, it switches to it, and then you can copy it.
That's what I want. Yeah.
Moving and
that's the only negative about that is that it's not like multiple windows. Great. All right.
And if you hate change, you can ignore them completely. Yeah,
that's right.
Even better.
That's my favorite kind of feature where people will complain, "Oh, it adds complexity. Oh, it makes if you don't want to use this feature, don't
turn it off.
Use it, and you'll never think it exists."
And it makes Finder elegant at a full screen size. Finally.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally,
better, not elegant.
Well.
It's
existable.
It's no longer drunk. It can walk a straight line. It can pass a DUI test.
In some states.
And then Aaron's favorite feature, or I don't know, you wanted to talk about tags.
I think it's a really interesting signal that Apple is sending us about the fact that a lot of users are not comfortable with directory structures.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that they're used to the iPad where all the documents are laid out for them. But if you lay them all out in one place, you need to have some way that you can start doing meaningful filtering on them. And tags is relatively primitive. I mean, it'd be neat if it was sort of a more machine learning thing where you didn't have to say what tags went with what.
Yeah, Google Plus auto tags now, which is really, for hashtags, really cool. Yeah. But, all a tag is really, if you, at least for me conceptually, I think of it as a saved search. Mm-hmm. So you can say all these documents are part of my MacBreak Weekly roundup. And that's a saved search. When I hit that tag, I'm going to get all the documents that are tagged. That way.
Like I got my mom an iMac, and she saves everything on the desktop.
Yeah,
mine too. And now she has some way that she can sort of sort through this.
She's still going to save everything on the desktop.
She is. Yeah.
Do you think she'll tag things now?
I'll be interested to see.
My initial reaction is, hey, we've had labels for years. Nobody used those.
Right.
Yeah,
isn't
but
this the same thing?
No. Here's exactly why they put it in, because tags are now part of the social language now. They understand the concept of tags because they tag photos on Facebook. Right. They tag things all the time. So it was the same idea they could have done 10 years ago, but without the built-in familiarity. What I'm hoping is that it really is mostly an organizational tool and a spotlight tool. I love the fact that you can essentially click. It automatically collates all the tags in a Finder sidebar. And if you click on that, essentially it surfaces every single file with that tag in the same window. What I would hope will not happen is that this is a precursor to them trying to sort of submerge the whole idea of user access to directories at all. I don't want to see the macOS go the direction of iOS, where every single app is sandboxed with its own apps, and that you are basically have to trust another application to locate another file for you and hand it off on your behalf. I like the idea of having the ability to get my hands on the actual icon, the actual path, the actual file that I want to manipulate on those times when I really want to do that sort of thing.
And it does, it is a much more mainstream solution, because my mom can't, if she does happen to save something in a file directory, she will never, ever find it again. And the fact that it's in the sidebar is sort of like what John Gruber was describing for Vesper, that by the sheer fact of them being in the sidebar, you kind of limit the amount of tags that you create, because it can't, as it starts looking like a big list, it becomes more and more intimidating.
Well, I don't think that'll happen. I think people will just continue to tag at will.
I don't think they're going to tag at all. I think it's just a nice thing, but nobody will ever use it. Because it's too much extra work. Now, here's an opportunity, Aaron. Some app that auto-tags.
Yeah.
See, then it would be valuable. If it could somehow look into the metadata, data and make metadata. Well,
that could be the next step, though, because Apple's doing that with other stuff. They're starting to automatically, they said that, photos, people don't take care of their photos, so they're going to start automatically making events and automatically making places for photos. And you can see a future where, these look like these kinds of files. We'll just make this tag for you if it's convenient.
Is it conceivable? Could you do such a thing? You'd have to be able to look into the data.
Yeah. The thing is that how useful for users would it be?
You'd have to be smart.
I mean, the photos is great because it's got metadata on both location and what time you took it. And that's how it's doing the grouping.
Right.
I think it'd be incredibly useful for the Finder.
It has to be smart, though.
But for people, I think a lot of people will, if they've used the Finder for a long time, they won't bother tagging. And then other people will probably tag too much and get these crazy sidebars that become less useful. If you automatically started tagging things, I think that would really hit a sweet spot.
Yeah. I think that's why Google put auto tagging into G+. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the real meat of it isn't really the features that we're seeing today, but the way that it will just give future software something to operate on. I've long said that I don't understand why every single operating system requires me to know where files are and to construct a search. I think that we're going to see next year, maybe the year after, where we can say, Siri, give me every document that I've created about cameras and filed for the Sun-Times in the past month, and it will just simply give me here the four things that you dealt with. I don't know where they are. I don't care where they are, but it'll find them.
Tags are a precursor to desktop Siri. That would make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. By the way, are you surprised Siri is not in OS X Mavericks?
Yeah, a little bit.
Likewise. I mean, the dictation looks like it became localized, but which is smart, but the Siri engine itself is not.
I double tap that function key a lot. Yeah.
Me too.
I think part of it is that's one of the reasons why I think that I'm and this is just a wild guess, but I think that something rebels against the engineer who says that, wait a minute, if we're asking the user to double tap a key on the keyboard to activate Siri, why don't we just give them something easier to type, a new version of Spotlight or a better organizational tool? Siri is better when your hands are full and you just don't have time to walk all the way over to your Mac to get an answer.
Although theoretically, when the Mac is plugged in, so you could have persistent listening and you could just say Siri the way you do with an Xbox, which is also plugged in.
Bad news. Yeah. Chrome's doing it, so will do it soon.
If they're not doing that yet, I don't think that's a motivation to get it done from the keyboard.
And the big problem Apple has is still that they don't own that technology. Google owns their voice, and Microsoft owns Tell Me, and Google Apple's does not own that core technology.
Remember, Apple used to do the persistent listening back in OS 8, was it? There was or maybe it was even OS 7, where you could set it to listen to you, and you could say. You could give your computer a name.
Oh, I dimly remember.
You say like, joke. Right? No, it was a simple Apple script thing. There's a folder inside the directory that if you simply name an Apple script with something you're likely to say, you'll say computer, tidy up my desktop, and it will simply look for a script file, an actionable file within the speakable items folder, and we'll just simply essentially double click and run that. So if it's an Apple script, you can do all kinds of cool things. I used to have I was a big nut about this for about a year and a half, and I actually at some point had to hang a microphone over my desk because I was trying to do as many things hands-free as possible. And then I realized I was doing a lot more work creating these scripts and expanding the system than actually doing the things I was asking it to do. But that's why I'm a fan of that kind of interaction. I don't think that the Mac does enough for the person who's not specifically sitting right there in front of the computer. It can be doing so much for someone who's just in the room and just looking for a result or piece of information. Like, okay, Siri, take the stuff about my next appointment and put it onto my iPhone for me. And then by the time you walk out your door, the address, the route information, the presentation, the phone numbers are right there in a folder for you.
We want Jarvis, like Andy. We want him, Jarvis. We want him now.
I don't want Jarvis. I want Jeeves.
Jeeves.
But this is you kind of bring up a point in that technology was extensible by the user, and Siri developers are dying to have some sort of a plug-in architecture where I can, when I write an application, I can add that capability to Siri. And this whole keynote, which was supposed to be a developer conference keynote, was not pointed at the developers. We didn't hear anything we really wanted to hear.
There's three problems with Siri APIs, as far as I understand, is that one, Apple's doing a partner play with Siri, so they line up best of breed, like they're doing Bing and they're doing Yelp, so they don't want anything that interferes with that. And if you can have an API, then you can just have your app tie in and there's no value in making a partnership. The second one is that Siri is still glommed into Springboard. It's not detached, its own module, its own app, which means that they have a lot of structural work to do. And the last one is handling conflicts. Like if you have three to-do apps registered and you say, Siri, add this to my to-do list, they have to figure out a mechanism for them to fight it out and see who gets the action from that. And that sounds like that's a, you know, iOS 8, 9 sort of a problem.
Moving along, there's stuff under the hood, kind of higher end stuff, OS 10 server. Anybody want to say anything about that?
The under the hood stuff.
Actually,
a lot
Xcode
of it made,
server is kind of
made,
interesting.
Yeah, Xcode server is interesting.
That's so you can have multiple users on multiple computers working on the same project. Is that the idea? Or
so we've all been doing test driven development, source code management, and continuous integration.
All the modern stuff.
And Apple is now giving us some help in that.
Ah, so it's more than an SVN. It's something else. It's kind of. Ah, cool. All right, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What else?
I was going to say that one of the interesting things about the stuff under the hood that he's talking about, like the faster JavaScript and the timer coalescing and the compressed virtual memory, is that it makes the hardware look so much better.
Right.
Like when they did, here's the new MacBook Air, and the battery life is so much longer, you have to stop and think, is it really because of the hardware? Or is it timer coalescing, which it could have a very significant effect upon battery life.
AppNap, which was interesting too. Yep. What I want to know about AppNap is often I open up a Safari window and I'm bored waiting for it to load, so I put something else over it to do. Am I going to come back now and find it loaded like I used to, or is it going to have napped?
I hope so.
And I'll have to wait and actually watch it in real time.
The idea is if an app isn't currently at frontmost, it will go away, in effect. It'll start.
Down to zero.
But as, and this is what from the Apple website, as soon as you start to use it again, the app instantly shifts back to full speed. So seamless, you think it's been running that way all along. You combine that with PowerNap and the timer coalescing. Both of those are Haswell features.
Yep.
And Windows 8 has done this as well. And this really does make a big difference in laptops because instead of being basically on the whole time while it's off trying to get mail and stuff, it's doing it in discrete chunks.
And the chatter last night is it's a Haswell feature, but imagine one day when an 11-inch MacBook Air runs ARM.
Right. Needs to do... Well, ARM,
then you get
that's an issue, actually, because that's an issue with Android phones, for sure. I don't know about on iPhone, but on Android phones, it's a huge issue of things waking up in the background.
Because you start getting a MacBook Air with 24 hours of battery life, and that becomes very interesting.
Yeah. Let's talk about hardware when we come back. More with our great panel, Andy Iannotko from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, both regulars on the show. Joining us, Scott Canaster from Google, but a name that resonates throughout the history of Macintosh. When was your first MacBook?
Oh, when you said MacBook, I was thinking laptop.
No. The first book about Mac.
1985, yeah, How to Write Mac Programming.
I bought that book.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you.
Do you consider yourself a competitor with Aaron? Or?
Do I?
Yeah.
No.
You're both helping people
that's
develop.
That's a past life to me.
Yeah. Although, and that was System 7 too, right?
It was before System 7.
Wow.
It was System. I don't think we had a number yet. We couldn't count that low.
The system.
Right. Yeah, it was the system. No, but that's a past life, but being a Mac fan and an iPhone fan is still a current life. That's why I'm.
Yeah. And even at Google, I think there are a lot of people using Macs and iPhones. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, somebody has to use all those iPhone apps that keep coming out.
Beautiful iPhone apps, I might add.
That was the fun part of watching all the Google I/O videos that many of the presenters were using Macs to give their presenters for Google Glass demonstration being driven from a Mac.
Yeah. Isn't that great? And Aaron Hilligas is also here. BigNerdRanch.com. You're doing a Big Nerd Ranch training everywhere now, not just
out there in
Georgia?
We have a new classroom that we do it in Georgia. Yeah. This is where Scott came to class 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We're still teaching there, but we're also teaching in Amsterdam and Monterey, California.
Oh, Monterey's great.
Yeah.
That's just down the road a piece.
There's a conference center there, Asilomar. We're teaching out of that. It's beautiful.
OS10 Asilomar.
Yes.
Ooh. Our show today brought to you by our friends at GoToMeeting. We got a little giveaway to give to you. GoToMeeting, first let me talk about GoToMeeting. It's probably the best known product from a company called Citrix. They do stuff that makes business better. Go to my PC, Podio, ShareFile. GoToMeeting allows you to hold business meetings wherever you are, wherever your clients are. And nowadays, with people distributed all over the world, the idea that you can go to a meeting on your iPad or your iPhone. You can even present. You can present at a meeting from an iPad. You use the iPad camera to be able to see the people you're meeting with. All of this is just—it feels very almost science fiction-y. You start the meetings. You can start them on a desktop, of course, Mac or PC. It's completely cross-platform, and in the Apple sense and in the real-world sense, cross-platform. You can see each other with HD faces. You're on the same page because, of course, it's got that great screen sharing. It is a great way to do meetings. Now, I know, you know, we don't like meetings. Nobody seems to really like meetings, but I got to say, when a meeting is fast, effective, when you get the job done, it is the best way, I think, to be creative, to you know, sometimes you just got to get all the parties together and cut through it. And that's what GoToMeeting really enables, especially with the webcam. So you're really, it's like you're seeing people. I know people keep GoToMeeting on all day. Because, of course, they don't charge you for how long you're meeting or how often you're meeting. They just keep it on all day and collaborate cross-country or around the world. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use our offer code MacBreak. You get 30 days free. And I want to give you a brand-new MacBreak webcam, an HD webcam to use with GoToMeeting. Here's how we're going to do this. We're going to ask you to tweet, if you could have a meeting with anyone famous, living or not, using GoToMeeting with HD faces, who would it be? And why? So get on Twitter. Who would you like to meet with and why? And, it, you know, we're not going to judge you on your creativity. So go crazy. But we are going to do a random drawing of everybody who uses the key hashtags. Hashtag MacBreak Webcam and hashtag GoToMeeting. That's how we're going to find your tweet. So make sure you use those hashtags. There they are. GoToMeeting and MacBreak Webcam. And you got to do this by Thursday at 11:59 p.m. Pacific. Because we're going to do our drawing and then have announce the winner next week on the June 18th episode of Mac Break Weekly. So you've got till Thursday to come up with a tweet who you would like to meet with anywhere in the world and why, anywhere in history and why, and then use the hashtags MacBreakWebcam and GoToMeeting. Contest open to U.S. residents only. For contest rules and regulations, visit inside.twit.tv. And don't forget to try GoToMeeting free today. GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. I was a little disappointed. Let's talk about the hardware announcements. We talked about the Mac Pro, but I was really hoping for more Retina Macs, MacBooks.
Not me.
You didn't think there was seemed to be a strong rumor that there was going to be a 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina that was so thin that you might as well have an Air.
Well, the thinness was a rumor, but a lot of the speculation around MacBooks just revolves around Intel's roadmap because Apple can't make them until the chips are ready.
All right, so Haswell came out June 1st.
Yeah.
So no Haswell MacBook Pros.
Not yet. They'll probably be announced.
Like soon.
Yeah.
So I actually held off at first because I thought I shouldn't buy a Haswell Air because maybe I want this 13-inch Retina, for instance. Yeah. The Airs are not retinized. We kind of suspected that would happen, right?
It is currently it's not possible.
Just can't be done.
It's the same rule. You get thinness, you get long battery life, or you get Retina, and you can have two of the three.
And wow, talk about long battery life. Yeah. 9 hours for the 11-inch, 12 hours for the 13-inch. Apple's usually pretty good, right?
Yeah.
These numbers are probably accurate. And no increase in price, just increase in power, basically.
Matter of fact, a price drop.
Yeah, $999 for the...
This is no longer a premium product. This is firmly in the middle of the price list. This is wonderful.
It's good. Yeah, a $999, and that's 128 gig SSD, which is an improvement. 4 gigs of RAM. All of these are 4 gigs of RAM unless you do a build to order. All i5s, again, unless you do
a build to order. Peter Cohen explained to me, he's much better at chips than me, that the chips are theoretically slower than the last generation chips in the MacBook Airs, but overall it's a better chipset and a much more power efficient chipset.
Yeah. It's the ULT Haswell, which is designed for ultra low power use. And that power napping thing and all of that.
Absolutely.
Built into hardware.
Did they specify whether or not the new battery life stats are running 10.9 or 10.8? I couldn't find an answer for that in the past.
That's a good question.
Hours.
I
believe they ship with 10.9, so they're probably using. No, they're not shipped with 10.
They ship with 10.8.
So I believe they're the ones that ship with the battery life.
They would have to say, okay.
We didn't mention, but 10.9 is this fall. Yeah. It's off in the distance. Yeah. And maybe, I'd hate to think that, maybe they're waiting on the MacBook Pros for Mavericks, you think? That's a long time to wait. Haswell's out. They could do it now.
But the one thing about Apple that people say they could, it's a big company, it's an incredibly rich company, but they're incredibly resource constrained. They have very small teams. Mm-hmm. The way they're set up, you can't do everything at once. You've got to stagger it.
You pick up at an Apple store June 12th or 1 to 2 business days shipping on these. I think so. The 999 is pretty capable. That's a 1.3 gigahertz dual core i5, 128 gig SSD, 4 gigs RAM, the new HD 5000 graphics, mm-hmm. which. According to Anand and others who've tested it, is a much improved graphics processor, comparable to maybe an NVIDIA at this point, right?
And it's not moving a lot of pixels like the Retina, so it should be very good.
Should be fast. Yeah. Should be snappy.
That's why I don't know why people are begging for Retina on a MacBook Air. You'd sort of destroy all the things that make it great. Remember that during the keynote, they also really underscored the idea that this is designed to be the mainstream Mac. If you walk into an Apple store not knowing what kind of Mac that you want, the default choice is designed to be the 13-inch MacBook. They said that almost explicitly with the new language that they're using. So if they were to slap a Retina, not only would the battery life suddenly stink, but also you'd have a more expensive product. None of these things are good for that designation as the Volks Mac.
If you want a Retina, they're aiming you at the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro.
Well, that's why I was a little disappointed they didn't announce a new one, because I would have liked to have bought that. So instead, I bought the 13-inch MacBook.
Now, this way, Apple gets to get you to have both.
Right.
I hope they're not doing that.
No, you, Leo, not
me.
Everybody.
Not
you.
Everybody. Only me. Anyway, it'll come next week. I also bought the new AirPort Extreme. They're supporting a new standard, 802.11ac. The difference between this and the next generation AD is it's single band. It's 5 gigahertz. The new one, the next generation, which is out shortly, AD will be both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, which may be better for people who want to go through walls.
But it does beamforming, which Phil Schiller was happy to tell you.
As far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first access point that AC access point that does beamforming.
I believe so.
And that is a very cool technology. Yeah. And in effect, it's aiming at you.
Yep.
It's saying, okay, this guy's using the Wi-Fi. Yeah. We're going to give him all the power.
Fire hose.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works in practice. I've played with some early AC devices from Belkin. You know, for the benefit, of course, you're going to need to use an AC Wi-Fi, a laptop, which I guess I'm getting, right?
We tried it on Android Central with the Android phones that have AC, and it was hard to figure out exactly what benefit you had still.
I don't see the benefit, yeah. And it's 5 gigahertz only.
Yep.
So that's actually kind of a severe limitation. So while I bought an AirPort Extreme, I wouldn't recommend anybody else run to get that.
If you need it, you know you need it.
Do the new AirPort Extreme still support BNG also?
I don't. That's a good question. Maybe there maybe are dual band because they have to support the older standards. Yeah. That's probably the case. I certainly hope so.
Yeah, really.
Otherwise, I'm off the air at home. Yeah, so never mind. Of course they do. Of course they do. And they look different. They look like
towers.
Yeah, they're weird.
And they changed the name a little bit. They put the name AirPort in front of Time Capsule.
So there is a time capsule version, and then there's a non-time capsule version. You actually have to let me see if I can find the non-time capsule version.
They said they wanted a huge surface area for the antennas to go out. No, by the way, we can put a hard drive in there.
Right.
Oh, it is, by the way, ABGN compatible.
Yeah. It is. Okay, that would make. Of course it is. So you do have 2.4 gigahertz available. Right. It just won't, the AC won't use it.
And it's nicely extruded.
I will never doubt again.
Never doubt again.
Am I the only one who misses colors? Remember when the Macs came like Skittles colors and you could buy an orange computer?
Yeah, really? You want an orange computer?
I'd love an orange laptop.
Better hope Johnny Ive isn't watching.
Just call spec, they'll make one for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Well, when you brought out the 20th anniversary Mac, it even seems freaking out that, wow, the Apple logo has colors in it. It's not just a white or a black. Wow. Imagine that we all lived through that. We lived in a time where there was a color Mac logo on every single product.
I can't wait to see this. This should come in the next – it'll come before next Mac Break Weekly. I can't –
it's hard to tell how tall is it actually.
Is it shorter than a Mac Pro?
Side by side, it'll look like a kitchen counter.
Yeah. So AC is interesting, but again, I think it's going to be
6.6 inches high.
6.6 inches high.
And 3.85 inches across. Okay, so, square.
Yeah, it's cool looking. It's actually a cool looking device. Is there a new Airport Express as well? Or is it? They didn't update the Express. So there's no AC Express, which is kind of a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to say, I think you want to wait for AD, and I think AD will come soon. I think it's. Exactly, as you said, if you know you need it, get it. But and it might be interesting if they put out an AC-based Apple TV.
Absolutely.
Because that's where you would maybe want this extra speed and the beamforming and all of that.
And our 4K wireless 4K. Monitor future.
Yeah, can't wait, huh?
Well, also with this, with this new Mac Pro tower, if you're spending $6,910, may as well round up to even $7,000 with a new base station. Yeah.
Wi-Fi built in for that price, by the way, on the Mac Pro. Just want you to know.
Oh, built in.
It comes with Wi-Fi.
BTFO.
Yeah, and dual Ethernet, gigabit Ethernet. So looks like the Airs are a solid product. And I hope it's not like 30 days from now that they're going to announce a MacBook with Pro with Haswell.
They probably will. I mean, it's not going to be too far in the future.
Yeah, but now
if you need it before the end of the year, wait. I mean, like, it'll be out this year.
I don't need it at all.
What
does that mean?
30 days sounds awfully quick, though.
Yeah.
But I think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be making that decision who just last year they might have not even had much of a – not really spent much time thinking, oh, do I want a MacBook Pro or do I want a MacBook Air? Oh, come on. I don't want that toy MacBook Air. Now that they've added so much to the Air, even I'm thinking that maybe the next time I buy a Mac, another MacBook, which would probably be next year sometime, maybe that is going to be a 13-inch Air because I'm thinking of all the reasons why I would need to have a 15-inch model right now, and they're that list is kind of going down.
Anybody disappointed there's no touch?
No.
I sure wanted touch.
I'd be shocked if there was.
Yeah.
Not disappointed. I would have been pleased to see it. I'm writing a review of the Chromebook Pixel finally and liking it so much that now I'm in like 2 weeks of testing to see, okay, let's start using it to the extent where I start to find things I really, really hate about it. and I find myself, I'm using that touch screen on a totally non-touch screen, touch-optimized operating system, so much more than I ever thought I would.
It still works.
If it were just as a third alternative input where you have the keyboard, you have the trackpad, and sometimes it makes sense to use a touch screen too. So I'm not surprised it's not there, not disappointed it's not there. If it were there, I think I would. That's something that I wind up using a lot.
I guess if I have any surprise, it's that Mavericks doesn't have more touch support. I mean, it really is Apple saying, you know what, touch is not going to happen on the desktop.
Yeah, well, they've done as much as they want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't added new gestures to the trackpad or to the magic.
Touch is not the thing.
Well, I mean, there's different. So touch breaks down differently. So you have direct manipulation where you touch it and you push something and it moves the screen. And then there's like abstract gestures like on BlackBerry where you go left and right, up and left, and that opens up something. And those are harder to teach people because they're not discoverable.
Gestures are weird.
And there's a limit to how many direct manipulations you can do and how many fingers.
Right. Well, that's why touch screen is so important because you're touching a thing that tells you what it's going to do.
Yeah.
A button or something. Andy and I both, I think, have got the touchscreen bug. How about you?
Me too. I've used a laptop with the touchscreen. I love it.
And it really, after all, was Apple that brought us touch with the iOS. They're kind of ceding this to Windows, to Microsoft.
Until they do something.
Or at least they trained us.
Yeah. Yeah. And Microsoft is doing it in desktop. Yeah. And Whether that's successful or not is debatable, but I think it's the future. I mean, you know, even when I use my, believe it or not, my Chromebook Pixel, I touch it all the time.
Yeah. Touching the screen on a laptop is something a lot of people think they wouldn't do if they're used to
natural.
A Mac. But yeah. you start doing it.
What Andy said several times that resonates with me is that kids today just learn touch as the de facto method of interaction, and that they're going to have to grow up using touch, and Apple will address that market, I'm hoping, at some point.
Well, but I think that they've said not for a year.
Or maybe not with this kind of tech. Like, maybe it won't be like OS 10 with touch. It might be something else.
Like what?
Well,
like iOS for desktop?
Who knows? But it might be whatever is next. Whatever they do next will be.
But it's years off, I think.
10 years.
10 years off.
When they run out of beaches.
In 10 years, it'll be thought of.
A screen the size of a billiard table.
A big...
OS 10 strip mine. Yeah. Let us talk about iOS. What do you say? iOS 7. That's the other big... And really, I kind of buried the lead because everybody expected this is going to be the big story at WWDC, and I think it probably is. It's the Johnny Ivification of iOS. Scott's gone, and so is felt, so is leather, so is stitching, according to Greg Federighi. It's what are you laughing at?
That just had to be a really long afternoon to be Scott Forrestal. So the person who spent like 20-hour days, weeks and weeks on end, becoming strangers to their families and their friends because it was their mandate to make sure that leather and that torn is as perfect as possible. Oh. To hear senior Apple executives just dumping on your work time and time again, and getting a huge laugh every time. Oh. That's gonna hurt.
Well, just to be fair though, I mean, Scott Forrestal brought Carbon. He brought iOS. He brought the App Store. He brought a lot of things people.
I'm sorry. I wasn't dumping on Scott. I'm saying
Apple dumping on. Yeah.
Well, in fact, the conversation. I see Steve Jobs going, Scott, I told you, go to the jet, take pictures. Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I can see that totally.
Absolutely.
I can see that as well. And a little shout out to Tim Cook, who got a lot of trouble when the maps were not perfect.
Yeah.
And everyone said this would have never happened on Steve's watch. This brilliant redesign of iOS would not have happened under Steve's watch.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
You love it.
I think it's really clean. I think it caught them up with what was happening both on Android and Windows. I think that they'll put the Apple polish on it. I think it's a really good step forward. I think they had to wait a little while till the user community was ready for the sort of gestures and for the Chrome to disappear and these sorts of things that we're now comfortable with. And I think it was time.
The thing to remember with this is that this is not even beta 1. It's not even ready enough to have an iPad version released at the event. Yeah. Apple changed management roughly 8 months ago. They had to go through a lot of stuff, and they've had a race to get this ready. And what we see today is as much as they could get ready for WWDC. But I think it's the single most divisive thing that they've released in a long time, because as much as some people will love it, some people are going to really hate it. It's only similar in terms of spatiality, so it'll be confusing and off-putting to some people. And the design language itself is interesting, but not everyone is going to like it. And it's not yet finished enough to see whether it's going to be consistent or not, because right now there's so many little things. Like, there's new gestures, but will they be? They didn't show whether they're consistent across apps yet. Icons like stocks are black, and they really kind of stick out. There's so much blur going on, which is an incredibly expensive computing operation, that how does that affect the rest of the operating system? It's clear that Johnny Ive, and I think they said at the event, he wanted to make it clear, simple, plain, three-dimensional, but we haven't seen how that... Yeah, well, three-dimensional, because when you move the screen, you see the background layer.
That is a cool thing.
You see the icon layer, then you see the badge layer on top of that. The problem with iOS before is they had this linen texture, and it would be underneath sometimes, on top sometimes, you lost the space, and now everything... They showed this whole diagram of him stacking it up to show where the layers of interface...
It needed to be rethought, and I think they clearly rethought it in significant...
But I have to agree that translucence is the one that I think was really weak. Just gratuitous translucence.
It's everywhere.
They said it was to create a sense of the context, but it's never like when the keyboard popped up, I was like, oh my goodness, where am I now?
Yeah, right,
and I had
right.
to have a blurred background behind it. Here's my quote. You ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Wax paper is the new Corinthian leather.
You think this is wax, but let's take a look. For instance, the control center, which slides up from
wax
below.
Paper.
Wax,
all the controls kind on of wax paper.
Kind of see through it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's pretty though.
The icons aren't necessarily obvious. Like,
it's hidden because of the low contrast.
Like, a lot of people don't seem to know what's between the flashlight and they completely Sherlocked all the flashlight apps, but they don't know what's between the flashlight and the calculator.
What is that thing? Okay. It's not obvious. I guess you get used to it. Yeah. It's a timer. You know, John Gruber kind of nailed it the night before. He said it's going to be a very big change, and some people are really not going to like it. And he kind of nailed it. So we've got, you know, put flashlight right there front and center, like the thing that you hit the most. Maybe I'm a lefty, so maybe that's not true for righties, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think they should have a fart button. Then they could really just get all those apps out of the...
All your knowledge.
Until then, you'll just have to use your original operator manufacturer equipment, John. But it's frustrating to try to talk about this stuff, though, because it's sort of like trying to judge an entire language based on reading one poem written in that language, because it's not going to be about what we're seeing in this demo or even what we can see in the beta if you have access to it. It's going to be when you have 100, 1,000 instances of apps that are written using this. So,
go ahead.
All I'm saying is that I think it's going to take about a month, maybe even 2 months, before any really real valid criticism of iOS 7 can come out, because it's going to take at least 2 or 3 weeks just to shed the idea that, gee, this looks nothing like what I've been using for the past 5, 6, 7 years. And that's a really powerful mojo to get past.
Well, even worse, I think initially it's going to be very disorienting because none of the apps will be iOS 7.
So we have a bunch of developers and designers who are panicking right now, right?
Yeah, they are trying to make
their apps look consistent with
iOS
7.
Otherwise, you're going to have...
in time for the fall release.
Including the icons.
Which are all like they're straight out of children's books, right?
Although some are like, I don't want to mention any names, but some people are like, oh, you know, screw that. My apps are staying the same. I'm going to be different than iOS 7. So they're going to go both sides.
Well, the interesting part is also that some of the really brilliantly designed apps were already there. When you look at Letterpress... it actually looks like an iOS 7 app.
Absolutely. Vesper looks the same on iOS 7 as it does on iOS 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also I wouldn't want some of these multi-platform apps. I wouldn't want Evernote to look radically different on iOS than it does on my iPad than it does on my Android devices or on the web. So,
Scott Canaster makes an interesting comparison. He's sitting right next to me, so between the
I'm
new
in the room, Leo.
The new control panel. And the old control panel, very similar, very similar.
Almost identical, right?
We're missing the Mac floppy icon, but other than that, I think
it's a rabbit there.
And there's no rabbit and
for faster, slower. Look at that. That is a memory.
Now, if they really had a sense of humor, they would give us a FatBits interface just for like 2 minutes, just to see how long it would take for everybody to realize they're just putting us on.
Maybe they are, Andy. You just have
Can you
to find
back
it.
To the screen again, Leo?
Yeah,
I just remember when they announced that the new version of macOS is going to be what Harbor Seal, and you could just see he got about 800 people in the audience who thought that's the most brilliant and wonderful thing. Oh wait, you're making fun of me now.
Here's the let's look at the control center again. By the way, a lot of this looks... this top bar is very Android-ish. I mean, all the Android phones have
the iconography is very interesting this time because it's very different language than Apple's ever used. Yeah. It's very sparse.
Airplane mode, just an airplane in a circle. There's Wi-Fi. That's Bluetooth. What is that little moon, the crescent moon?
Do not disturb.
That's good. That's a nice feature, by the way, that Apple's implemented quite well, and it should be front and center.
If you scroll up, Leo, you've got dots instead of carrier signals now.
Yeah, what is that? I thought maybe that was just in lieu of an AT&T, but you think that's going to be part of
that's carrier signal.
That's the carrier signal. Yeah. Mm. Well, wait a minute. Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Bars. That's the bars.
Bars aren't bars.
I get one dot. One dot of reception here. if you go, one of the other pictures there, Leo, they show the new card view. So multitasking has been updated, not just at the API level, but the interface level.
And this is straight out of WebOS.
And now almost everyone is using this card view now.
Yeah.
You have home screen in there, which you can't fling away, but everything else you can fling away.
Yeah.
The developer point of view, the multitasking is really neat in that when you receive a push notification, your app gets some time on the CPU. Mm-hmm. So if there's, you know, usually there's an update, and the first thing you're going to do when the person presses it is go and fetch the extra information for that update.
Right.
And now you can do that before they actually go and try and read the notification. So it will make the application seem much snappier.
And this is important. This goes along with the power napping, because the real risk on global multitasking for apps is that you're going to have an operating system that never sleeps, that everybody's busy, everybody wants CPU time and RAM.
And battery.
And if the OS can really handle it intelligently, and so that's built in.
Well, that's what they're saying, is that they've put enough smarts in where they can dedicate CPU time to the apps as is appropriate.
And clump it together.
The ones that you use the most, they'll update the most, but they'll also wait until you have good reception, good areas before it does a lot of those things, so it won't be trying to use
I spend a huge amount of time on Android phones making, you know, apps that are normally going to wake it up. So I say, shut up. I don't want you to do anything until you... And that's the only way to improve battery life on an Android phone. It makes a huge... I mean, like a 2x difference. But it's a lot of work. So if the OS does that properly, you're going to see great much improved battery life.
There's so many cool ideas there, especially the one that I don't have the full background on it, but the basic gist of it is that if one app decides that it needs the GPS right now to get a location, the OS says, well, here we have two other running apps that would like to know what where they are right now. Since we've powered up the radio anyway, let's give them each about a half a second to get their work done before we shut down the radio again. So this seems to be a lot of really interesting ideas under the hood.
Yeah, well, and battery life is probably the single most important thing on a mobile device.
Absolutely.
So anything that they can do, and Apple's in a good position because they really control the platform in a way that Android does not. So they can really enforce good rules.
Absolutely, the whole stack and the hardware.
Yeah, it's theirs. Notification Center, I'm not as happy about. It still pulls down from the top. Unfortunately, it's still got that tiny touch target, the little X.
Not actionable still.
No actionable. You have to tap the message to open messages. And
carousel,
then
try to find your way back because there's no carousel back. You've got to hunt for the app.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the lock screen notification. That's nice. But, you know, this is a big annoyance for me in notifications. I have to close each thing one by one all the way through. There's no global clear. And they really need that. That's a simple thing.
Also depends how much of your information you want to let leak through the lock screen.
Well, that's another question is the chat room's asking us, because right now when you see the lock screen, what you see is a message.
Yeah.
Can you turn that off?
Yeah, I believe so.
I hope so.
What's the granularity, do we know? Of like, can you? I don't imagine you can turn it off per app. Or just like, you know, you can do certain things on the lock screen now. You can use Siri through the lock screen.
Right.
Or you can disable.
Yeah. Entirely.
And everything.
Right. And I imagine they'll do it like that. I would guess, but I don't know. iTunes Radio, which we thought was going to be a really big announcement from Apple, was just kind of a,
by the way.
Yeah. But I think this might be significant, and they certainly Sherlocked Pandora pretty damn good.
Yeah, so US only, and you get it for free only if you're an iTunes Match subscriber.
$25 a year. Yeah. And ad supporting, I guess, is probably not audio ads, but iAds, I would guess.
They weren't clear in the public stuff yet.
Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, all I was saying is that was probably the biggest disappointment of the entire keynote for me, because I was hoping that they would include the trademark Apple phrase. We decided that we wouldn't want to do people were asking us to do subscription radio for years. We don't want to do the same product as somebody else. We want to do a better product than anybody else. And now we're proud to unveil. If there was a reason for this service to exist apart from we're upset that people are giving money to Pandora instead of us, they really didn't communicate that during the keynote.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. And yet, I can't wait to use it. And because I'm an iTunes Match user, it's free. It's only in iTunes. iTunes on the desktop. And Windows, too, by the way, iTunes, as well as iOS. It looks pretty good. It's got the curated playlist that the Zune Pass invented.
It keeps a track of stuff. You can go back and buy it at the iTunes store later.
That's, I'm sure, why the record labels liked it. There's that big 129 button right next to it.
Which is part of the value Apple brings to the proposal with the record company.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. But still, I mean, I was watching the Tony Awards on Sunday, and by the end of the night, I had about 8 cast albums added to my Google Play library the fact that you can simply say, Kinky Boots, great, give me the entire album. Great, I've already paid for that. Okay, now give me Matilda. Great, got that whole album. And I'm listening to to nothing but these songs nonstop. I'm not sure it'd be the same sort of pleasurable. I'm not sure why you're laughing, but I'm sure it's not for a reason that you should be scolded about.
You like the show tunes, do you?
I'm with you.
There is Broadway is part of the rich American international tapestry of culture. And if you were to shun, mock, or denigrate someone Cole Porter. Oh my God, what a horrible person he was. He didn't do. Yes, you are. Oh, Leo. I'm sure everybody there and everybody in the audience knows that you're teasing me.
I love show tunes too. And Neil Patrick Harris and that opening number were perhaps the best opening number of any award show I've ever seen.
Agreed.
I'll end the rat hole really soon, but if you have not seen this opening number, watch this and you're thinking how many things could have gone wrong in this incredibly ambitious thing where if any one of these like 800 things going on in sequence had screwed up, it would have brought the entire thing to a screeching halt. They would have had to go to commercial.
Very brave.
Every single thing, step, 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 step. It's on YouTube. I was like, I watched it like for the first 2 minutes. I missed the opening, and then okay, guess what? Mac Tubes launch, download, yeah. Sync to iPad.
Yeah, really, and kudos to Neil Patrick Harris, who showed himself to be really one of the greatest entertainers alive
today. Dr. Horrible himself.
Dr. Horrible, you are no longer nerd bait. You are the king, and just a beautiful. And you're right, Andy. I mean, I think what they were saying is, look, we do it live 8 nights a week. You know, I mean,
in fact, he literally said that.
And I think that's it.
Also the bit where like, can you give me my Les Miserables film? Like twice up. Yeah. On the stage, we don't need a close up to prove we're really singing.
must watch.
But getting back to the point, I mean, what I love about Spotify and other services like that is that you can hear about an album and then have that album.
Yeah.
And then I'm the sort of person who will then, if I've listened to that album a few times and I like it, I will convert that to a purchase. I'm just not sure that iRadio gives me something that I really, really want.
It's probably similar to the 1Password Sherlocking thing, where for a lot of people, they'll just use this because it's built in, it's the default, and it's okay with them. And people like Andy or myself, or you will just get the better service.
There's something to be
said. What's missing, though, in this?
Well, I mean, it's just that it's a very straightforward streaming radio service. And to Renee's point, that's an excellent point. I mean, we are experienced users, and we tend to think that, why don't people use this service that's so much more full-featured and costs just as much money? The answer is that this service comes free, built into the thing. They don't have to download anything. They don't have to hear about Spotify. They don't have to hear about Google Play Music or anything like that. They just know that there's this thing where if they say, hi, I want to hear some Cyndi Lauper, then suddenly you're hearing, I also will not tolerate any chuckling about Miss Cyndi Lauper.
No, I am now, with you on Cyndi Lauper.
Now, Tony winning. She is close to what she's got now.
Three quarters
she
of the way to an
Emmy. She's got the... Exactly.
She just wants to have fun, Andy. I'm with you on that.
If her work with Jeff Goldblum and Vibes had been appropriately acknowledged by the
Academy, she'd be an EGOT.
Her work with Hulk Hogan, too, was underrated.
I think the Oscar may elude Cyndi Lauper. I'm sorry to say, boys.
Never know. Wouldn't you have thought that Tony would be the last one for Cyndi, though?
Yeah, true. Well, you know, she's a composer.
Hell of a performer, hell of a composer.
Moving along to Macintosh and Apple stuff. Photos. Apple Sherlocked themselves. They Sherlocked iPhoto. Their new photo album, really nice. I think we all, right? I mean, you can't. First of all, they've added events. They've added, sorting by geography, sorting by time. Again, something Android's done, but...
And more of their automated, we'll curate it for you sort of thing, because we know you're not... Like the time machine stuff, we know it's okay. We know you're not going to back up. You know, we're not going to sort your albums. We'll do all that for you if you want us to.
One thing that they did innovate on, and beautifully, is the thumbnails. Even the little teeny-weeny tiny thumbnails that you can scroll through and stuff. That's nice.
Yeah.
No, but I've never seen anybody do that. That's really, really well done.
I like how they've done it almost as well as the Samsung Galaxy S4 does that thing where you hover over it and just magnify it. That's a great idea.
Andy, you're starting to sound like me. Did we make you bitter with a Cyndi Lauper?
Don't go after Cyndi. You have a voice like that.
Leave Cyndi alone.
Consistency since the 20s.
Let me point out one thing that Apple stole that I really love, which is Microsoft has this idea of semantic zoom, where when you do the pinch gesture, it doesn't just make it smaller. It actually reformats the data so that it's still usable in that smaller format.
Is that on Safari that it does that? Or where?
No, that's in the Photos app that you're talking about. Yeah.
It's all about compressing an entire year's photo into one little strip on the screen. You think that's useless, but you get to see, oh, wait a minute, you see that big string of nothing but blue and beige? That was my vacation to the Cape. And so you might have forgotten that was that summer you went there, but now we can drill right into it. That is
very glanceable.
And I didn't mean to imply that iPhoto is gone by any means, but a lot of the reason people used iPhoto is for the albums and the organizational tools, and that's now built into the camera.
Brand new photo app.
Yeah. AirDrop continues the progression to get away from wires, which is good. You can just drag and drop files over
to you. It wasn't clear to me, I don't know if anybody, if they said it or not, whether AirDrop between OS 10 and iOS also exists, because they only showed it in terms of iOS to iOS. And I don't know if they're using Wi-Fi Direct, because it sounded like it might be Bluetooth.
They didn't.
They did also, in the keynote, mention that there is an API for AirDrop as well. So you'll be able to push things out to AirDrop from your application.
So no more bumping Samsung phones. They specifically targeted Samsung.
It was interesting because they kind of dissed IE for Chrome, then they dissed Google for Bing, and then they dissed Samsung for Dentix.
This is a feisty Apple.
No, but they kind of like... They made fun of everyone sort of equally, and they kind of made you feel happy at the same
time. That's right. You're right. It didn't feel angry or bitter. Yeah. It was jolly.
Chrome is better than IE, but Bing is better than Chrome.
And they made fun of themselves.
Yeah.
with you know, with getting rid of the green felt and sea lion.
No, no, yeah, I think that it didn't feel like a bitter, angry thing, and yet it was the feistiest Apple we've seen in a long
Tim Cook's apple.
Yeah, Tim Cook's new feisty apple. The camera app, they added Instagram filters.
There's a square camera mode.
And even a square framing. Yeah, that's nice.
And now the greatest mobile camera in the world now can take the crappiest photos you can imagine.
I'm happy about this for one reason, because I'm never again going to get a press release saying, we've added filters to our app.
I hope not.
Put that in the system and stop putting that
in the app. I hope not.
Calendar app, now with photo filters.
Safari on iOS, new formatting for a full screen. That's nice. It's pretty.
New tabs are gorgeous.
Tabs, thank you. And a bookmark. I love that. Isn't that great? Mm-hmm. That kind of sideways cover flow. Yeah. Cover flow's back, baby. And you thought you missed.
Rolodex.
Yeah. Siri, newly empowered to actually do things she used to do.
Yeah, settings.
And she can be a dude.
Yeah. And a dude. Yeah,
she can be a dude. She's always been a dude in French,
Andy.
I do her in French. Wait a minute. That sounds wrong.
Dude.
But I do. Never mind. I use the British. Never mind.
The Australian.
Abort. Wave them off. Goose.
Is it in-app purchase?
Watch out. I do not think you mean to go there.
New interface for Siri, too.
New interface for Siri with a squiggly line. I think that reflects what you're saying. I hope it does.
Yeah, it's a voice line, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not just some random squiggly line. Okay, let's play the video on the there it is. Random squiggly line.
It's the old voice control line, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it is. We've seen this before.
Now, what's interesting is that they use ultra-thin Helvetica everywhere except on Siri, which gets big, bold Helvetica.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And uses Bing for its web search results.
Siri's a partner play. For Google? No, it's a partner play. So Google's still the default in Safari. But Apple makes partnerships for Siri, and Microsoft probably had a better deal for them than Google.
To me, that was one of the most frustrating things about Siri, that most of my queries until I learned.
I do not know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you want me to search the web? Hey, great idea.
Yeah.
What, and now, presumably, it'll do that without having to ask permission first.
But will Bing become a verb?
To Bing it?
Siri, Bing this.
Good question.
New mail, much improved mail, again, stealing some ideas from Mailbox. Yeah. The swipe to delete.
A little bit
like
of BlackBerry 10 hub in there.
Oh, yeah? Well, oh, yeah, because it's unified.
Over, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why they started with the weather app. Every damn weather app in the world has had weather backgrounds.
Because it's
remember
cool.
HTC on Windows Mobile?
Yeah. I mean, this is like...
Touch...
Okay, nice. I don't even know anybody who still uses the built-in weather app. I guess these are features for people who don't add other third-party
stuff. I use
the
built-in weather app. I stick my head out the window, and then I use the built-in weather app.
And you get
snowing. It's just snowing. I know this.
Yeah. Mount Rainier, London, everywhere. Paris is raining. That's the difference.
Crying.
I think what's funny about all this is how little of it was directed at developers. There was very few technologies that were made available to developers that we didn't have already.
They said, 1,500 new APIs, but that was it.
That was it, yeah. And you get the feeling that this keynote gets more and more user-focused.
It's their only keynote of the year.
It's not NDA, so they're not going to say anything that's...
And there are things that developers were dying to hear.
Why?
So, for example, we are all dying to have time-limited free trials. People are afraid to spend more than 99 cents for an app. So you can't charge more for apps until Apple gives us free timed out trials.
Yeah, but if it weren't for that, we wouldn't have in-app purchases and freemium. Thank you, Apple.
Thank you, Apple.
Simpsons, Leo.
Simpsons Tapped Out is the most expensive application I've ever purchased. It's more than Photoshop at this point.
And paid upgrades. We'd love to have paid upgrades. And I think that Apple actually has to grapple with this because they just announced an update.
What are they
They're going to do an update for iWork.
Right.
And people are buying that through the App Store, and then we're going to have to see how they deal with that.
Well, maybe that'll make $200.
Maybe that's the moment when it'll happen.
Final Cut Pro update is going to be another $200 or free. It's their choice.
Right.
Yeah,
time to fix it.
But we didn't talk about iCloud in the cloud.
Let's talk about services. Yeah, iWork,
which was interesting to me because it looks beautiful, it looks gorgeous. It looked like they finally did an HTML what you could do on the desktop, but they didn't announce any collaboration, which is the only reason why anyone uses or suffers through Google Docs.
You can't share docs.
Well, in Google Docs, you can sit there and like three people will write an article at the same time together. And iWork, it looks like drag a picture and make it look really pretty, but
and there's no collaborative commenting either. That kind of surprised me that they had several years and a big announcement, but didn't add collaboration.
Yeah, initially, on the face of it, looked to me as a response to Google Docs and OS. Yeah. Office 365. But You're right. Without collaboration, what is it? Go ahead, Andy.
I wouldn't say that collaboration is the be all end all. I mean, it's nice to, basically, it's nice to be able to. It makes it easier for these for users to lock into iWork if you give them a way to use it without using it on an Apple logo device. And given that now it's being projected into Android, it's being projected into Windows. The thing that I thought was really interesting is that if you have a $250 Chromebook now, you can use that as your handy dandy mobile computer for editing all of your iWork projects and maybe even presenting your keynote projects instead of spending $1,200 for a MacBook if you want to do it that way. If anything, I wish that they had given us more of a plan for what they intend to do for the actual desktop iWork. They did hint that there's going to be a new version of it out later on this year. Interesting that they didn't even show a single new feature out of it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not so interesting given that iWork is not a service and iCloud is. But it kind of makes you think that they really do want iWork to be more of a destination for all of your devices. And if they keep bleeding off users to Google Docs and to Office 360, and the cloud version of Office, that seems like a simple thing for them to do to make this option for iWork in the cloud.
I think you ended up with the worst of both worlds. That is, you don't have the sharing of Google Docs, and you don't have the local native apps that you can use it on the airplane.
Or the ubiquity.
I disagree. It's a beautiful web app. I was really surprised at how much functionality they'd put into just simple HTML5, but essentially anything that's running a modern browser can run this, and this is the functionality that you get with it. I think it just increases and leverages the importance of iWork, and that's for that reason it's good enough.
It's also good to see Apple, dipping their fingers back into the HTML5 stuff. And they had the beta iWork that didn't really go anywhere, and they had the pastry kit stuff and the ProudScore stuff, and it kind of disappeared. Yeah. And now it's really back. And people, complain about iTunes on Windows 8, and who knows how Apple's going to continue cross with that famous Tim Cook line. I could make, Android apps if I want to. Don't want to, but I could. And now here you have iWork that's going to work everywhere.
Yeah. They do say in the features coming soon on the Apple page, sending a link to a document will be coming. So you could at least share a document that way. You couldn't work collaboratively. And version histories, that'll be nice. I mean, it's impressive. It's kind of more like an HTML5 demo than anything else. But iWork is 4 years old. They really need to do something about this. And Apple's not notoriously great with services.
It's also, it's a different approach iWork is more layout centric than either Google or Microsoft. Like Word, you can stick stuff in, but it's really a text flow program.
They imported a Word document. It just looks so boring.
Yeah.
But so important to do, right?
Well, they do read and write. It's round tripping for all of the Office programs. So that's important. But they've always done that, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if announcing it yesterday is a sign that they're going to put more energy behind iWork and add things like real-time collaboration, or if it's going to be dormant for a while again.
Let me ask Aaron, did developers, were they disappointed with the lack of talk about services? I mean, there really wasn't.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the iCloud syncing stuff is woefully bad.
And iWork, and that's it.
They didn't solve the iCloud syncing at all.
That was another thing that everybody was waiting for.
Probably is a session in private, right?
There's NDA stuff that covers all that, but they didn't want to mention any of that in public.
But it would imagine the standing O they would have gotten if they said, and now document syncing works.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what everyone's dying to hear.
If they had given iCloud document syncing as much crap as they gave skeuomorphic design, they would have rushed the stage and just carried him off in joy, saying, at last, a sign that you understand. Like, that was the big complaint here from everyone.
If you had a ticket to WWDC, you were probably happier with that yesterday.
All right. Have we covered everything that happened? Okay, last thoughts before we wrap up the WWDC wrap-up. Anything else? Oh, iOS in the car.
Yeah,
Siri will appear in a lot of vehicles,
including Eddie Q's Ferrari.
Yeah, he drives a Ferrari.
Well, he's on their board.
On the board.
He's on the board.
That's why he said yesterday, one of these cars interests me a lot more than the others.
I got it now. Wow.
I think developers are waiting to see if we have the ability to write applications that work on the car screen, if it's going to be treated just as another screen, or if that's going to be sort of locked down to Siri. And iTunes only.
Well,
and also, if this is only going to be a feature on the Ultra, if this is going to be a luxury differentiator in the car line, or if this is going to be something you can only get in the car, if you spend an extra $800 for this extra package, it's who cares? It's stupid. It's nice for people who have that kind of money, but I would much rather see some sort. When I first saw that icon of the, you know, you got the usual gang app icons to show as they're walking through here, the stuff that we're going to show you during this keynote, and I see, ooh, I see a steering wheel with a phone in it. Is there going to be a car app in it? Because Android has a whole category of car apps that make just any phone or any tablet just function so brilliantly in any car you want to put it in. So just like when the previous keynotes, when they talked about, oh, and we have integration with BMW cars where you can control the audio transport right from the steering wheel, I'm saying, great, I'm going to rush right out and buy that $72,000 car just so that I don't have to reach up and do this once.
Right. So, John, if you would show my screen. So there's the apps, and by the way, they bring thin Helvetica to cars, which I think is important.
Make it hard to read. Really good move on a car.
I think this is a bigger story for the car manufacturers than it is for Apple or Apple users. This is car manufacturers saying, Ford's really making some hay with voice control. Notice Ford is not in the group that is going to be adopting this. Maybe we can jump on the bandwagon just by incorporating Siri. It does look like the Apple Maps are, you know, on screen, and messaging is on screen. They'll read messages. You can dictate messages. It's looks like a full Siri implementation. But you're right, Andy. It's only going to be in luxury vehicles. You're not going to see this in.
It's nice. I'm not begrudging. Well, yeah, luxury vehicles like the Kia, I know, but
Kia. The Yugo is not getting it.
I'm not begrudging it. It's just that it's not the sort of announcement that I think should get anybody excited about the future direction of iOS.
Honda, Mercedes, Nissan, Ferrari, Chevy, Acura, Kia, Hyundai, Volvo. Wait a minute, that's Acura. Yeah. What's the one above that? I don't know. Toyota. What's the Z? Tesla and Jaguar. I don't know what the
Infiniti.
Infiniti? Oh, it's Infiniti, of course. And what's that? That's Infiniti?
No.
I don't know what the hell's that? Anybody know?
The Flash. The
Flash. Andy's right. Barry Allen or Volga. Wally West?
I think you know the answer.
Barry Allen forever.
Anyway, Eddie's happy about Ferrari, and so are we.
Go ahead.
One more story from WWDC yesterday. Yes. Was automatic updates.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the John McCain feature.
And John McCain's reply
did
on Twitter.
Tweet?
Yeah, he did. Thanks to Tim Cook for the automatic iPhone updates. Hashtag Apple, hashtag WWDC, from John McCain's official account.
John McCain has binders full of social media experts, apparently.
See, yeah. I think it was a deal with Apple because of the name Mavericks as well, which John McCain was the original.
He was a Maverick.
Right, so.
He should have tweeted that. How interesting. So he did, in fact, and you know, people didn't, you know, gave him a little trouble for being unclear. But actually, I think he was asking a question a lot of us wanted, which is, can you please turn on, I'm not happy about going to that, icon every time and seeing 40 updates that I have to do manually.
It's send John McCain.
You have to open Christmas presents every day. It starts to get boring.
But the big question is, are we going to have the option of declining automatic updates? How many times have you been sort of mortally borked by the fact that they pushed out an update that removed a feature or a buggy update that you didn't download because you've been reading about the firestorm online about it?
By the way, apparently John McCain is also welcoming Hillary Clinton to Twitter. That's the other thing he's doing.
He's the official. He's the head of the Twitter Chamber of Commerce.
Apparently. Squad. That Tim Cook tweet got 1,090 retweets and 354 favorites. So John's got the social media locked.
That was one-fifth of the people in Moscone yesterday.
He knows what he's doing. Wow, that's impressive.
Congratulations, John, for your 1,000 retweet tweet.
Yeah, that's a good number.
Avesar.
Any other big stories, Aaron? As a developer, Aaron is the audience for this, all of this here.
Yeah, no big stories really. A lot of the stuff is the same. I'm not too worried about updating the books. I think I have to redo the screenshots a lot. We do have to rewrite a bunch of apps, but that's expected.
That's cosmetic.
Yeah,
just change the resources. Everything else can stay the same.
Well, yeah,
right,
yep. Right.
But there are new APIs. Are there significant changes in the APIs?
No, not really.
Okay.
They're not very deep.
All right. Let's take a break. Come back with our tips and tricks and thereabouts. For you newbies, Scott and Aaron, you know, anything you want to say is cool and wonderful.
All right.
You can do it. You're not that new.
By definition.
Anything you say is cool and wonderful. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. If you are a web user, you probably know that not all websites are created equal. Some websites are just beautiful by nature. They reformat perfectly when you look at them on a small screen or a big screen. They just seem to work. They never go down. That's probably a Squarespace site. Squarespace never goes down because they have integrated the content management software with the hosting in a beautiful way. All of their designs are mobile responsive. That means you don't get a kind of a separate mobile site. You get a site that looks great no matter what size screen. In fact, all the images that you upload to your website, whether you're a photographer, designer, blogger, automatically are sized. I think they do 7 different thumbnails to make sure that they'll look great no matter what size screen they're on. Very easy to post, very easy to design. It's all drag and drop, point and click. But if you're a developer, of course, they've got a great developer platform that makes it easy, that including syntax, code-colored syntax, and so forth. Just a really great place. Now, I got to show you one new thing about Squarespace that I'm very excited about. It's always been very affordable. In fact, I clicked out. You know, Linux is not as easy to use as everybody says.
It's the year, Leo. What else was I going to say?
The pricing is always very good at Squarespace. If I go over here to the pricing menu, I like that. Isn't that cool? It's like a mobile app. $8 a month for the basic plan. But I want you to look at the $16 a month plan. This is the plan you get when you buy a year. You can go $20 month to month. And it includes, and I've never seen a plan this affordable, include unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs. Bandwidth is unlimited. You'll never get a bandwidth bill, even if you become super popular. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. This is $16 a month. You want to add e-commerce, $24 a month when you buy an annual plan. And that includes a really nice store, plus unlimited physical or digital products. Store is just as good in mobile as it is, you know, in a desktop. And that's important because a lot of people are buying on mobile nowadays. They include inventory tracking, tax calculations, even shipping and coupon controls. And, of course, as always, unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. If you buy an annual plan, there's another benefit. They'll actually register a domain name for you for free and hook it up to your site as well. So that makes it very easy. You're going to love this. Squarespace.com. The best part is you can try it free. No credit card needed. 2 weeks. It's enough time to really get an idea of what you're up to. You can look at these beautiful templates. Always new ones coming online. This is the new Momentum template. That's just a great full bleed, gorgeous template. They've got a new calendar feature, too, called the Events Collection, so you can share schedule updates. We should really be using that on our inside.twit.tv page, which is a Squarespace site. The layout engine. All of this you could try for free for 2 weeks, including their importers, which will take content from pretty much all the major blog APIs, including even comments and images, and all the SEO is preserved. And just so you do the design and just flow all your data into it, that'll take a day. Play with it for 2 weeks if you decide to buy. I want you to use the offer code MacBreak6 and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. MacBreak and the number 6 for the month of June. Squarespace.com is everything you need to create an exceptional website like Inside Twit. All right. Final thoughts on MacBreak Weekly. Let's start with Renee Ritchie. What is your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is an app called Vesper. Full disclosure, the designer is a friend of mine, Dave Wiskus. He worked on it with Brett Simmons, who's a legend. He did NetNewsWire, worked with Dave Weiner. He's an amazing developer. Also with John Gruber of Daring Fireball. And they did sort of a Michael Lopp thing where they had a designer, a developer, and a dictator. And they used that as the... So the designer's job is... So the developer's job is to make the architecture. The designer's job is to make it human. And the dictator is supposed to choose in between them.
What a good idea.
Absolutely.
It's a new agile.
Well, I mean, it's a very Apple-esque way of designing things. And their goal with Vesper was to tear down... I don't know whether it was supposed to be a to-do app or a list. Sorry, like a to-do app or a notes app, but it ended up being somewhere in between. And they sort of, before iOS 7, they tore it down to its component parts, and they added just the most minimal possible feature set. So you can add a note or a list item, and you can tag it. And it works very similarly to OS 10's
really
tagging
gorgeous,
feature.
Yeah,
beautiful, very flat, minimalistic design. The name Vesper, of course, James Bond inspired, and they have credits in the app that are very James Bond-esque. And it's notable for several reasons. One, it's incredibly highly opinionated. You get the choice of one font, the one that they like. Mm-hmm. The workflow is, you know, sort of John Gruber's workflow for how notes should be done. There's no sync. There's no import or export. It is a 1.0. And it's sort of in the Michael Jurwitz philosophy. They're charging real money for it. They're charging $5.
I like that.
For the app. And I love that because developers deserve to get paid. They have children to support, families to support. I dislike the theory that if you charge less, you will eventually make it up on the volume of zero.
Unless you're Waze.
Well, I mean, there's certain. It goes back to that Will Shipley analogy about miners versus farmers, where you know they want to build a business, they don't want to get bought out by another company. And there's a lot of things that this app does not do that a lot of other task managers or list manager apps do. But if your workflow happens to be similar to John Gruber's and you like the design aesthetic and the style of it, then you can be very highly effective because it's almost letterpress-esque when you use it. There's no textures, but there's a lot of it's a three-dimensional interface. You can slide things aside. It bounces back very charmingly. There's a little shake when the text comes back into place. And I was one of the beta testers, and they were incredibly responsive. They had literally a who's who of beta testers on this app. And whenever new features were arranged, they very carefully went through them and decided on them. And they have a very good roadmap going forward. And I've been using it. I don't know if in light of current, intelligence disclosures, being offline like Andy's Battlestar Galactica computer is an advantage in some cases, but this app lets you have just a local list, almost like a field notes on your iPhone.
The Galactica of notes. I like it.
Yeah, and I would recommend people try it. They knew going in it was going to be very divisive because some people would love it, some people would hate it. Yeah. But if you're the kind of person for whom this appeals, it's a very nice app to use.
Well, Evernote, which it has all the functionality, is so damn ugly
that
I think there is probably a market for something that is more appealing visually. Q Branch is the publisher.
Their idea for Q. I was
Q Branch. Get it. Yeah.
We interviewed them on Debug, John and Dave and Brent, and they went through. They explained exactly why they made the decisions they did. But they wanted to be Q Branch because Q makes the toys for James Bond, and they want to make stuff that makes you feel like James Bond.
Got it. What is the Vesper? I don't know.
Vesper Lyant was the first Bond girl in Casino Royale, and they have a martini named after her.
Wow. Okay. That's a little obscure.
Yes.
All right. Scott Canaster, your pick of the week.
My pick is an iOS app called GMusic. And it's an app for playing Google Music. And my disclosure is I work for Google, but I'll tell a quick story to disavow any favoritism behind that and the pick. I've been enjoying playing music on computers since a long time ago, let's say, and before you could actually put music from CDs onto computers, before CDs existed, I've been fascinated by the idea of playing music on computers. And when SoundJam arrived for the Mac back in whenever that was, and morphed
that became
into iTunes.
Yeah, it became iTunes, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
And you could actually take your music off of CDs and put them on the computer, right. And then the iTunes Store. That was fantastic.
You're probably still in Google Music. You still have some of those original rips.
I bet I
that
do.
You did with SoundCloud.
And if I had used Napster.
I do. And I use Napster a lot. I have gigabytes from Napster.
I probably have some of those,
Yeah, that
too.
I use. All my Metallica music is from Napster.
Really?
Yeah.
So
I just do that to make Lars.
You go through your iTunes library, you see those 8 tracks that were ripped at 96K, and you're
some of those sound better at 96K.
Here's a band I was really into in 1995.
So I've been kind of wanting the perfect, at least for me, because music is very idiosyncratic. Listening to music is an individual pursuit. I've been wanting an app for a long time, or a mechanism that provides music that I can own, that I have control of forever, because music on music stores sometimes goes away.
Right.
Sometimes it's posted for a while, then you go back the next week and it's not there anymore. I want music that I can buy and have forever. I want music that I can play on a subscription basis. So if I kind of like it or I want to try it.
Does this do All Access? Does it have the Google Radio?
Yeah, it does. It's
tied
into
awesome.
It's a Google Music. So when Google Music All Access came out a few weeks ago, it was my perfect service.
Right.
And I couldn't believe it because I kept trying, well, can it do this? Can I make a playlist that mixes songs I own with songs I don't own? Yes, you can. Can you put it on your mobile device? Yes, you can. And I checked off all my items until I got to iOS. And there's no iOS client. Well, it turns out that GMusic is a pretty good iOS client, an excellent iOS client for Google Music All Access. And the author updated it over the weekend after it was after All Access came out. Now, so with GMusic, which is a free app, you can, I think it's a free app. I may have paid a little for it and forgot, but.
Anything under $20 is free, right?
It's way under $20. I can access all my subscription music, all the music I've bought. And I believe a couple weeks ago, Sundar Pichai from Google announced that Google's working on an iOS client, but don't know when that's going to come out.
He said in a few weeks.
Well, how many is a few? I don't know.
I don't know. It could be 52 few.
Could be 52.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm really happy with G Music. I use it a lot, and it's pretty close to it with Google Music, Google Play Music All Access. It is pretty much my dream music client, music system. Spotify was almost there, and Google is a step beyond that, which is pretty cool because the previous incarnation of Google Music was not that interesting to me. It didn't really do enough that I wanted.
Yeah. Well, it's nice because you have your Google Music, you have your collection in it, yep. But then it adds the radio, which I guess is kind
well,
of
Well, yeah,
what...
that's right. I forgot to even say it also has the radio features, Pandora or iTunes Radio
right.
style radio feature.
Right.
In addition to...
Well, that's what I... Yeah, and that's new, and that's great, yeah. Yep. I'm looking for Cindy Lauper, but I'll find
it. Andy took it all.
Oh, I was going
to... You don't deserve to have it.
Wait a minute. Let me get my kinky boots on here. All right.
My pick was going to be Neil Patrick Harris's opening number from the Tonys.
I stole your kinky pick. You got to see it. It's amazing. All right. G Music app. It is a great app, and I've been using it, and I will continue to use it until Google does a Google Music app for
And maybe
iOS.
Even beyond if they do a better job.
Maybe. I use the... The app, of course, on Android, and it's great. The yep. Google app on Android, and it's great. They've really done a nice job.
And just for the record, it's $1.99 on the app
store. Close enough to free.
Very close to free.
Aaron Hillegass, your pick of the week.
Yes, I hate to do this, but I'm going to pimp my own stuff.
No, you should. Because
so, Big Nerd Ranch, you know, we're best known for training and contract programming on iOS and Android and HTML5. But every couple of years, we see a niche that we think somebody should have taken care of this, and we actually write the app and sell it ourselves.
I love that.
And we just shipped one that we're really excited about. It's Ruminant with two O's. So it's R-O-O-M-I-N-A-N-T. Did I spell it right? Ruminant.
Yeah, Ruminant. That sounds
and,
right.
And it's a conference room scheduling app. The app itself is
free.
Oh,
we need that.
And the, we charge by the month based on how many conference rooms you want us to manage for.
We got one.
So if you have a gazillion employees and you have one conference room.
Which is the problem.
It's really cheap for you.
Awesome.
So we tried to make the price proportional to how big of a conference room problem you have.
Yeah. Well, the problem is we have two companies using one conference room. So this is good. $5 a room per month.
And it's not limited to any particular group of people. You just add them the email addresses in and anyone can be there.
Making a note of it. Ruminant.
Yes, Ruminant.
Room with two O's. And it's ruminant.com if you want to look at it on the web. And, of course, you have apps for what platforms?
Right now it's just web and iOS.
Web and iOS.
We'll be doing Android and Windows 8 cool. before long.
That is, by the way, a reminder that they do teach Android programming as
That's
well.
Right. And we actually just shipped our Android book, which is excellent. If you go to Amazon, you can see people raving about
I love
the
your Cocoa
it's the
book.
Best book ever.
Oh, that's great. Everybody should visit Big Nerd Ranch. .com. It's a good looking site too.
Thank you.
Nicely done, yeah. Andy Anako, I think you're going to wrap it up with your pick of the week. Is it Neil Patrick Harris?
No, I have two picks. One is the Cyndi Lauper last, which I'll just bring in here. My friend Cyndi
what was
here.
Her, what was her Broadway? What did she get a Tony for?
For Kinky Boots.
Composing the music
Boots.
For in Kinky Boots. Yes.
Oh no.
But. In all seriousness, this is her album of American standards, and it really shows you that in the intervening 20 years since She's So Unusual, she has only refined her technique, and there is really nothing she can't sing. Some of the most beautiful tracks I've got in my library. Sincere recommendation. I'm not just doing it to jab at you, although jabbing at you is just a nice little sidebar. In terms of an actual Mac related review, I had a chance to take another look at Marvel Comics Unlimited, which is Marvel Comics' subscription-based digital comic service. When it first came out a couple years ago, I didn't think much of it because it didn't work on iPads or iPhones. You had to be attached to a web browser. It only had they would only release comics that were really, really old or could promote a movie or TV show. So it really wasn't much good. But now they've got a really, really deep catalog of titles that go back as recently as a few months ago and as old as the 60s. They recently updated their created an iPad app that is not as perfect as I would like it to be. It's certainly nothing compared to Comixology, but it does allow you to read full page comics. And although it does still require an internet connection, you can keep as many as six of these comics on the device at any time. So if you're about to board a plane, you can grab like a 6-issue story arc and keep it there for you to actually read. So the price, so good content, decent enough app. The app needs a lot of improvement, but it's a decent enough app. And the pricing is also very, very good. If you purchase a annual subscription, I believe it's $60 a year, which comes down to much less than $5 or $6 per month, which is certainly a reasonable amount of time to have thousands and thousands and thousands of comics. It's like having that, having a pathetic friend as a kid who buys all the comics and will let you read as many as you want, just to be his friend. Yes, I was that kid. I'm sorry. I shouldn't just make fun of that. So it's decent enough. Again, room for improvement, but a good enough value and a nice thing if you're into comics.
I've been using it, I've been reading every night in that app, and I use it on the airplane, and now thanks to Andy, I'll be reading all the John Byrne Fantastic Fours on the way back.
Yeah. That's the one where all my free ones are, right?
It's like he said, it's not a perfect interface, but the content is just unbelievable, especially for the price.
Yeah, if only they could get a partnership with Comixology and have their reader technology powering stuff.
They should,
because
why not?
It's probably DRM'd, isn't it? Because they don't want you stealing the comics?
Mm. Well, I mean, I'm sure that if they could just simply say, Comixology, could you please give us your, hook up your beautiful reader front end to our DRM content, that would be a good thing for readers everywhere. Because there are times where it's like, I've got basic CBR, like unlocked comics readers, and they're not, and this Marvel heavily produced and very expensively produced iOS app is not as good as that like little CBR reader. Versus, I'm now on page 5 and it's just locked up, but it's not, or it's not locked up, but it's not actually, there you go. It's,
and I'd like a DC version too, Andy. Can I have a DC version, please?
Yeah, I mean, DC is doing some interesting things, too. They recently came up with essentially choose-your-own-adventure style comics. They released it. They announced it at an event in New York last Tuesday night, I believe, that really is you're reading a Batman story, and you can decide whether you want to have Batman follow a report of the Joker, or that Catwoman is up somewhere, or that there's an unnamed nuisance at the street, and then follow that through. And also motion comics. So I don't know if they're going to be any more useful than all the other attempts that comic book publishers have made to do anything in a digital comic that is more complicated than simply, I take the page of the comic, please put it on the screen, make it legible, and make the pages turn very, very easily. That's really, really all we want. So if they have a success with that, then it's the first time they'll have a success with that. But it's good to see them trying, at least.
Andy Iannocco writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. You can catch his reviews there and his website, CWOB.com. And, of course, he's on Flickr, too. Andy I on Flickr. Great photos. Great photos. Thanks. There. Thanks for joining us, Andy. It's great to see you. Are you glad in hindsight that you stayed home?
I'm not glad. I mean, there's a trade-off. There are things that you will learn when you're there that you will not learn from your sofa, because there's so many other people you could meet up with and talk to. I'm sorry that I didn't have a chance to have breakfast with Scott. I'm not glad at all that I'm not going to have a chance to have dinner with you guys tonight. But on the other hand, there is something to, if your job is to generate analysis and thoughtful commentary about a really complicated keynote, there's something about being able to watch it from a sofa with proper hydration and being able to simply screenshot anything that you want to take notes on later, because if I were doing that in San Francisco, I'd be balancing my notebook on my knees in this really cramped little chair, and then I'd have to find a Starbucks that has a free space where I can sit for an hour and a half, because I got to file something before this afternoon is out. So,
well, we're glad you're here at least.
I'll definitely make it for the iOS event in the fall.
All right. Well, really?
Oh yeah.
There's going to be one
on the phone.
If there were to be an iOS event,
I thought you might have known something.
There are two slips there. Factor number one was the fact that I knew that this was going to be live stream. But factor number two is that in the iOS event, you really want to have your hands on these devices and actually touch and feel them. And I would not have that opportunity. There's nothing like that going on. So.
You could have looked at a distance at the Mac Pro.
Plus, like I said, I just blew $1,500 on Google Glass, man. I don't have any money. I'm eating ramen, man. I'm going to have to walk to New York.
He's eating Cyndi Lauper albums.
You've stumbled on Google's secret plan.
Thanks to Aaron Hellegast, BigNerdRanch.com for all big nerdology. And we really are glad to have you in your hat here.
It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Same to you, Scott Canaster. Where can people go to find out more? Is there anything you're up to? Where is your music online? Can I listen to your music? SoundCloud?
You can get your own. Oh, no, I haven't
uploaded
spent time in SoundCloud.
I mean, like, the music collection from Napster. Although, if you want, I can give you a USB key.
Sure, why not?
No problem at all there. It's just MP3.
Best place for me is Google+, google.com/+ScottCanaster. I think it says that on the screen right now. Amazing.
Here it is. Look
and
at that.
Twitter as well.
All right. Yeah, I follow you on Google+, of course, because you're kind of my hero. I've read almost all your books. You've written more books than I have even. So
more than I can count.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, it's nice to see you in studio every once in a while. It seems like it's a lot lately, which is great.
It's a busy year so far, Leo.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Maybe we'll see you in the fall. Absolutely. Who knows? Nobody knows.
Andy knows.
Are you disappointed? No iWatch? No iTV?
No, because this was a software event and a pro-level event. So Apple announced, you know, computers and iOS betas and OS X betas. And like Andy said, they usually do a phone and a tablet sometime during the year, and often that's in the fall.
Right. So you think still there's a shot?
Well, Apple will release new products eventually.
Eventually. One of these days.
You're not going out of business yet. They're not putting up a for sale, everything must go sign.
I'll stick my neck way out and say that a new iPad, a new iPhone will be released at some point.
Almost certainly
at some point. They're not that intimidated by BlackBerry 10.
With any
Ouch.
Renee does also have that CrackBerry site. iMore.com. Renee Ritchie, thank you for being here. Thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesdays, the first show of my week. Hope you'll tune in live because we love seeing the chat room. And if you can make it out to Petaluma, the new OS X Petaluma, we'd love to have you in studio as we have this great live audience, about 20 of you.
That's
it's 10. Wonderful.
10.14, right?
10.14, yeah.
Now with eggs and butter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the rich, creamy butter you could eat. It's lickable. if you can't get here live, of course, after the fact, always available. We make audio and video downloads available on demand at twit.tv/MBW or on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work because you know what? Break time is over. Yay!